My bad.
It's so loud.
My bad. I'm hearing nothing. Do I got the? Did I grab the? Find out which is everything all mixed up.
Please stop throwing a tantrum.
You know what? I wasn't going to make bunny ears for these headphones, and now I am because I'm making someone else bunny ears for their headset.
And
I'm making me a pair now too.
Okay. All right, so watch this. This is hilarious.
Comment threads and Twitter feeds are easy places for me to set people straight. I have a track record of changing people's minds 100% of the time when I leave angry comments online. I am a social justice warrior.
This is a guy named J.P. Sears.
Mm-hmm.
Does he do
the vegan one?
He does a lot of, I guess he does comedy videos. What are you doing?
Tightening up back up because I loosened it. It was too low. We're not live, right?
Well, I'm recording this.
Oh.
It's fine.
Oh, my bad.
No, you're fine.
This is my keyboard.
See, you didn't say we were recording.
When I'm behind it, I'm invincible. I can say anything without consequence. It helps me dish out social justice. Serving size large. What happens if I catch you saying something politically incorrect? I hit you with my 5-step protocol. Step 1, I ignore what you have to say. Step 2, I make huge assumptions about what you meant, and then I inform you about what you meant by what you said. Step 3, I correct you. I tell you what you should think, while also getting the point across that you're a terrible person. Step 4, I turn my caps lock key on once you start trying to stand up for your own free will. Step 5, finally, I hit you with my trump card where I trivialize your entire being into a one-word label, like telling you you're a racist, you're a sexist, you're a misogynist, you're homophobic, you're heterophobic, you're transphobic. You're human phobic. I'm like a doctor handing out complex diagnoses. When I decide to label someone with one word, I don't have to use my brain to understand them, because I have a preformed understanding of the one word that I use to label them. So I can just understand the word that I decided. You're trans.
What are you talking about? You're talking
about Twitch. About Twitch. And then see, got down here. I took your photo off because you got mad. That's a photo of me.
Right.
Okay, so you got the Twitter button. See? Did use Comic Sans.
That's very nice.
It's Arial. All right. See? Podcast, Discord. I got the Patreon button. Okay. Then I got your text from the Patreon. For many new libertarians, we're libertarians, the first podcast they hear. We are on the front lines of spreading the libertarian message. Your support does several things. Blah, 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 blah.
All right, let's go back to the video. Harry.
Are you trying to... Oh, are you...
Now do you get what we're doing here?
No.
I'm giving myself some time before we start here.
Phobic. You're human phobic. I'm like a doctor handing out complex diagnoses. When I decide to label someone with one word, I don't have to use my brain to understand them. Because I have a preformed understanding of the one word that I use to label them. So I can just understand the word that I decided to call them instead of understanding them. I don't actually stand for anything. I just crusade against everything I don't stand for, which happens to be everything because I don't stand for anything. It's like I take on the virtues of cancer, and then I spread those virtues when I attack. I spend my days and nights vigilantly patrolling the internet for anything that's not politically correct, which is everything. I'm like the Batman of the online world. I usually spend about 4 hours a day compulsively checking Twitter. I have 83 followers. And I follow over 800,000 people, which means people are severely interested in what I have to say. And then I spend another casual 5 hours a day looking for other opportunities online to assert social justice. I accomplish so much in a day that you can't even measure it. My purpose in life is to be right. Luckily, I'm always right. My ability to always be right is based on my ability to point out how everybody else is always wrong. It takes a lot of effort to be in a highly intelligent state of mind all day like I am. So I prepare for my day as a social justice warrior by reciting self-empowerment affirmations in the morning. Like, I'm not responsible for how I feel. I'm not responsible for how I experience the world. I'm not responsible for my life. Other people are always the problem.
Are you okay?
How dare you? You are not allowed to ask me if I'm okay. K is an offensive letter. It's hate speech because the KKK use it in their name. Legislation should outlaw K. You are a racist.
Well, do you feel stable?
You can't ask me if I feel stable. I have an uncle with an inner ear condition that makes his balance unstable. That is hate speech to people with inner ear conditions. You are an inner ear phobic. I don't create change because it's not a very effective way to facilitate change. Instead, I righteously demand that others change themselves. And I even more righteously demand that they create the change that I want to see. My favorite inspirational quote is, "Demand that others be the change that you wish to see in the world." Some people erroneously think that I'm not out for the good of the world, that I'm just crusading to feel significant and to get people to notice me. That's not true at all. In fact, that's just basic Marxist thinking, which is highly offensive. And I feel that you bringing it up is a personal attack on me because I'm a redhead. You're gingerphobic. I need a safe space for a moment. Being a social justice warrior is like having a get-out-of-jail-free card to bully people while pretending I'm helping people. Except it's not that at all. Something much different. It's carte blanche. You should be able to say what you want. But before you do, you should have to give a trigger warning. But after a month of that, I'd start to get triggered by your trigger warning. Then I'd demand that you give a trigger warning about the trigger warning. And then after a month of that, I'd start to get triggered by your trigger warning about your trigger warning. And then I would require that you accommodate me and my new demands again. If you didn't know any better, you'd think nothing's ever good enough for me.
I just want you to know that.
That's hateful of you to think, like, I have lost because the, I don't identify
even know if
as me.
If he is making
as a social justice warrior, I'm an expert at communication. If you were an expert, then you too would know that swearing at people is the key to effectively communicating a point. And whoever uses the most capitals and hits the enter key the hardest is the winner of any online argument. You're welcome, world, that I'm here. It's tough to do what I do. I can do it because I'm always certain of myself. Did you know the people who everyone enjoys being around the most are the ones who are always certain of themselves? Yeah, fact. In spite of this, I make the sacrifice of always being alone online. People wish they could be around me more because I'm such a joy. But I have a duty to serve and protect society from everybody but me.
Yeah, I'm trying to get this. I had to re-log into Mevo. So that's why. No.
I had bacon and eggs for breakfast. So you're saying kill all vegans? Ah, man, this memes are ridiculous.
That Peterson video was so bad.
I feel like doing it. Got a meme with you and Roger on it.
Well, for some reason, it's not allowing me to stream to Mevo. So I'm just going to record it.
What, like the video?
Yeah, like it's not allowing me to choose Facebook as a destination.
Well, they probably wanted you to pay $15.99 a month.
Probably. But guess what I'm not going to do? Format SD card.
Well, you know, if the Mevo would work like a camera, you could just hook it up to USB to your Mac and just hit go live to Facebook. But since it doesn't work as a camera, I can't do that. Oh yeah! Once again, thank you. Everyone did like the camera that you let me borrow. People,
oh good.
People was like, "We can see you."
Yeah.
Not saying my camera was bad and all, but it was pretty awful.
Hairy and high def.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, "Oh crap! I'm in high def. Y'all can see me."
Okay.
See my drinks and stuff like that. That's what I was like, okay, all right. Which sparred more comments.
Six.
Like, what's that? What's that behind you? Oh, this?
What is behind you?
What, in my house?
Uh-huh. Like on the show.
I've got a lot of Gunther toys and a television in the living room. So like the TV, my pirate flag is behind me. And all the stuff I try to keep from Gunther.
Because she's not mobile yet, though.
No, but she rolls.
Okay.
And scoots.
Gotcha.
And it's like, try to get her to crawl, right? But she'll just like start, and she'll be like, this is difficult, and then starts rolling.
Right.
Which is like, it's dumping. Because Oni does it like a couple of times and gets, until she kind of gets dizzy, stops for a second, and then rolls some more. Right. I'm like, stop it. Be normal. Crawl.
Let's try this. Oh boy.
Stream to Twitch.
Now I'm gonna stream to the Facebook or to the YouTube.
I can stream to Facebook on my tablet if you want.
Yeah, this is doing it. Why is it live in 8 minutes? Live now.
Ouch. I just told you had an 8 minute delay.
Goodness. Goodness gracious. Where's the channel at?
Where's your Mevo God now?
Yeah, that's going to be a real issue. That will be the end of the... That's pretty... That's really something. Like, the one feature that you have and it's not connecting. It's okay. That's all right. That's what we're going to do. Then that's fine. We'll do OBS and we'll do something different. It's fine. Now where's the link?
Even like we can do like a private live stream to like to YouTube,
right?
And only give it out to the Patreon feed. That's what Brian Sovereign does. Mm-hmm. He streams to YouTube, and he goes just like, and he just gives it to the people in the. It just comes out in that private feed,
right?
So like you just check your email box, the link's there, and click, and you go. I don't think you should do that because his works because we're all techs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think. Unless you have confidence, or you know that they open, everyone opens their emails from you every day.
Right, and they don't. They definitely don't.
Okay, I want you to know, I'm just saying that somebody does, not suggesting that you do this, because I don't think the audience, they're like, man, y'all haven't got live in months. Check your emails! Hold on. Fedora... ruler38@aol.com. Password 1234. Oh crap, LP wants some stuff. Oh, here's the wall email. I'm just joking. No one listens to the wall has an AOL account.
I hope not. Otherwise you're fired.
Gotta yell at them some more. Get off. Yep, see, I did an hour stream. Look at my... Today, all the stuff in my house. This is the broken closet because Lacey broke the closet leaving today. Because I...
What?
I cleaned up...
You break a closet?
She broke the door.
Wow.
She got frustrated because it got a little stuck on the carpet that you wipe your feet on when you come in on the hardwood.
Right.
And she got frustrated. Well, like, it was... Well, because I cleaned out the front closet because there's some stuff that Lacey stored in there, right? And I noticed
she
never touches it. So when I was taking all the Christmas stuff back down, I took all the other stuff down there and cleaned the whole closet out.
Right.
I took it down to the basement and I told her, like, hey, either touch that and I put a date marker on it or I'm going to chuck it.
No, you're one of those. I was that way when I was married.
I'm going to chuck it. Well, if I don't chuck it, you know. Because we have 1,000-square-foot basement, okay? There's 1,000 square feet down there.
Right.
If we don't chuck things, we just kind of collect things. Because it's a big...
Neighbor is FaceTiming.
It's a big, gigantic, concrete, you know, storage room.
Right.
Which you're like, oh, man, I would love a gigantic concrete... Yeah, you would until you start filling it up and going like, oh, dear God.
That's... People, why don't you get a house? Well, I'll just fill it with crap.
Yeah. And then you saw the video of the stuff. I was like... Every time I find, like, a crappy home ownership video, I just like to put it on Facebook and tag you on it so you have, you know, ammo just in case someone goes... Why don't you have a house? Of course, I made a joke with Christy on Friday, and I was like, and she was talking about wanting to, you know, crash at your place, and I was like, and I told her that, oh, maybe that's probably why Spangled, you know, denounced the idea of putting a wall studio in a house and actually have extra bedrooms.
Yeah. Everybody wants to come hang out at my house.
Yep. Would stay there, like, let's go to the wall studio. It's like 3,000 square feet next to beds there.
Right. Go there. I don't... People... I am an ENFJ, and I play an extrovert online.
Mm-hmm.
But... I just don't like being around people for more than an hour and a half, which is sad, but that's just sort of how it is. I'm just like, I just don't, I'm ready to go.
Click and you go.
Sounds good. Looks
good.
Whoa. Okay. Does not sound good.
I told you it was scratchy and poppy. See, I, as an ENTJ, I, love people only when they, do what I say.
Right, yeah.
Which can be bad. Or, not necessarily like I always want the lead. I will also follow if I trust in that leader. But if I feel the person leading is inadequate in their abilities, I have no problem about staging a coup. And have done so on several occasions. This thing is sticky. What did they do over here?
I don't know. They're like toddlers.
When we get a studio, I'm going to get like a separate desk. That's the hairy desk. There's going to be so much stuff on it that no one's just going to want to touch it. Well, hopefully it'll be daily then, and then I just come in and I do every show because I'm going to run the tech board. Of course, I kind of feel like that's what you want to do.
No, I hate doing video, to be honest. Like,
why do you do it?
Because we have to do it.
Let's why?
See. Because I think video is important. I think that it's like right now, we would have started 10, 15 minutes ago had this stuff worked, but it's not working. So, and like now I'm about to start my third event.
It was red for a while.
Uh-huh.
You know what I usually do when, like, OBS stops? Can't get it to work. I just restart, like, the OBS software.
That's what it just did, and it's...
And then it just works.
It's like, yeah. Stop streaming. Okay, there we go. Thank you.
Maybe I'll stream to Twitch. Your issues.
Control room.
Ooh, I go Instagram live. Hey, everybody. I don't like going on Instagram Live because it's, I feel like the button for it is too, once you like do it once, the button's too easy to hit again.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, because the live button doesn't go away enough. I think on a, the moment you stop live on Instagram, it should just close. Instead of like, oh, that's over. And then you like try to, you know, you try to do anything on it. You almost hit the live button again and go live. At least it does on Android. I don't know what it looks like on.
This is Stone's comments funny. So you're saying that you're never going to do another podcast ever again? What a funny boy.
What? For what?
In the Facebook group that I just posted. There.
Oh, what did you post?
I didn't see. Just basically this, the Mevo sucks and we're going to redo it.
Streaming, we'll post the YouTube link in the comments. Oh, you're going to, did you just take my thing that I said don't do and you're doing it?
What do you mean?
The thing is, you're going to post the YouTube link. You mean stream to YouTube and private YouTube.
We're streaming to YouTube. It'll be live here in any second. And then what I'm going to do is just put that link in the group.
Are you going to read super chats?
That's the problem. I don't know where people are going to comment, but until I can get the Facebook thing figured out, this is kind of...
Well, they can comment on the YouTube thing and send you super chats.
How does that work?
Super chats. What do you mean, the super chats, or what are super chats, or is that what you're asking?
Yeah, I have no idea what you're talking about.
A super chat is basically, because some comment section can be so confuddled. Let's say Stone really wants you to know something that he says. He can pay like a dollar, right? Mm-hmm. And then his comment gets huge.
That's the problem. Right? I don't know where people are going to comment, but until I can get
it, everyone can read it,
right?
So basically, shows off. So if, let's say like Stone goes, they can comment on the YouTube. Say, you know, like, and they can just like, he can ask a question this way, get a question through, and you can see it, and you're more apt to ask it because this dude just gave you $5.
Is that an that's on YouTube?
Yeah, on YouTube.
I've never heard that in my life.
Are you serious?
Never heard of it, no. Okay, here we go.
Now I'm suddenly realizing that, you know, I send Spangle links of cool things to look at. He doesn't really look at them. Or he just listens to audio only.
I read 90% of what you send in our chat. Do 90%, you? Yes. Maybe not even that day.
YouTube videos are probably like, I'll just listen to the audio and keep stepping.
Pretty much, yeah. So I will miss stuff.
Should have told me that. Now I feel like sending you more stuff. Fill this 90 with some good. Now I know it's 90. I've got to fill it up nothing but good stuff. I'm gonna send you some. Honestly, like what I want to do, right? Which would be awesome if I could get you and Roger in the Kumite, the morning Kumite, which is basically just a dog out fight between streamers.
Right.
It's like no more. It's ad hominem attacks. You're okay. Da 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 da. Get what's off your chest and say it.
I don't need any more of that in my life.
Oh, you know, just bring Nice and just go at him. If he starts hitting you too hard, just tag Nice. Nice. Full board, go at him.
All right, you ready? Let's get started.
Hold on. I was not, you know, you actually got it working.
Yeah.
So now I got to go on YouTube.
Harry, you're driving me crazy tonight. And it's not you. It's I took a nap, and I've realized in the last, like, 10 minutes as this hasn't been working, I'm super fucking grumpy. Can you tell?
No.
All right, good.
No.
I just realized, like, I'm so grouchy right now.
Oh, no, no, you don't seem grouchy.
Yeah, I'm grouchy. Check 1, 2. Hey, everybody. Gonna have to trim the beginning of this. All right, here we go.
I just want to see the comments.
Welcome to We Are Libertarians. I'm your host, Chris Spangle. We bring you all of the irreverence modern politics deserves while putting people before political parties. We examine current events from a libertarian perspective with the goal of leaving you better informed. Please be sure to rate and review us on iTunes, like us on Facebook, and subscribe on Patreon at WeAreLibertarians.com. In exchange for supporting our program, we give you all kinds of bonus content and free stuff, including the audio of Harry's Wednesday night show. That's 2 hours of content a week that you can hear in that private RSS feed. You also get higher quality. You get bonus episodes. You get all kinds of great stuff if you become a Patreon member at WeAreLibertarians.com. This show is crowdsourced, so you can send us news with the hashtag WALNews or in our Facebook group and Discord channel. We are always taking your questions and comments via email at editor@WeAreLibertarians.com. Please be warned that this show is raw, unedited, and authentic, so the language is sometimes strong and offensive. Today we're going to talk about the women's marches, we're going to talk about the government shutdown, we're going to talk about the 50,000 emails that have been, or text messages that have been deleted, that we've glossed on at the end of the last episode.
We're getting a look at even more of those text messages shared
that we glossed over on that last episode. But first, my co-host, Harry Price. Harry, how are you?
Going good, how are you?
I'm crabby as F.
I can see that just a little.
I've probably only gotten 4 hours of sleep the last two nights. I tried to take a nap today and yesterday. Mm-hmm. Didn't fall asleep. I'm the type of person that needs about 13 hours of sleep a night.
Oh, wow.
So I'm pretty cranky. I'm trying not to yell at Harry. Harry's giving me, as he always does, helpful tech advice. But tonight I'm not having any of it. I'm like, I just want to get my head down and get this done.
It's okay. I understand. And sometimes I don't give the best advice how people want it, but it's always comforting when I watch someone do, you know, basically take my advice but adapt it to their own way. It's lets me know that, like, Dear Leader does listen and he does care.
I do. I don't always take all of your advice because sometimes it's complicated, and I don't need that in my life. I don't like complication. You're like, I can set you up like first 4 virtual machines on your. I'm like, I don't need that. I don't want that. I'll clear my cookies if I want to clear my cookies.
Okay. First off, I'm proud that he did clear his cookies, and I'm happy that he did it. I just And I also respect the reasoning for him to reset his cookies for. I just think it's a better process for him to have the virtual machines open when he's doing stuff like that. So he is able to experience what he's developing for in different environments.
Right.
So this way you can have your virtual machine of a Windows. So you can know what your thing looks like in Windows 8, what it looks like in Windows 10, what it looks like in, you know, other versions of the Mac OS or Linux or Android even.
So I apologize if I snap at Harry or any of the listeners tonight. It is not you, it's me. Warning in advance, trigger warning. Yeah, so there's a lot going on. And first I want to say thank you to Harry for having a great Liberty and Chill. The very first Liberty and Chill. We are going to be rolling this out to other locations. If you're somebody that wants to get involved in Liberty and Chill, then you can send an email to price@wearelibertarians.com or editor@wearelibertarians.com. And essentially what it is on one night, we're choosing Friday night, at from 5, 6 on till 9, 10 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Just invite your friends to come hang out, drink, and it's a fun social event,
yes,
basically. And what we're going to do is give you the branding materials, and we have a Facebook group that you can join called Liberty and Chill.
Yeah, Liberty and Chill.
Right.
Presented by We Are Libertarians.
Right. And that's the Facebook group where you can connect with us there if you don't like email. So the idea is basically that we want people who are like-minded to get together and hang out with other like-minded libertarians, because a lot of times if you go to your local libertarian party meeting, for instance, it's boomers. We're trying to eliminate boomers from our lives. Mm-hmm. So this is something that we did here in Indianapolis for about 6 months to a year. Brett Bittner did it, and mm-hmm. it was a lot of fun. Everybody knew Friday, 5 o'clock at this bar, somebody was going to be there.
A lesser brewery.
Yes, somebody was always there. It was, yes, you know, I went probably 50% of the time. I won't make this Friday night, but I'll make the next one probably.
Mm-hmm.
Like, somebody will always be there.
Yes.
And it's a great way for you to just get to know other listeners in your area. We've got some people in Atlanta interested. We've got some people in Fort Wayne, our friend Christy Avery, Newcastle, Indiana. So, yeah, we've got...
And we always got sent a message from someone in the PNF that also wants it.
What is that?
Pacific Northwest.
Okay.
Apparently the giant mushroom wants us to host Wall out there, too.
Yeah, so...
Do Liberty and Chill out there.
So, yeah, and then we'll put it all on Instagram because that's a fun visual way to show off your group.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it'll be Liberty and Chill FW for Fort Wayne. Liberty and Chill ATL.
Mm-hmm.
So, because when people can follow that and kind of watch the faces of the people, because when you don't know anybody, you're not going to show up to a group. But if you can kind of lurk for a couple of months on an Instagram and everybody looks okay, then you'll show up.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and it's great to have like a liberty event or a libertarian event that someone can go to that's not, all right, now we're going to discuss this one policy.
Right.
Full Robert's Rule of Order. So, you know.
Right. No, it's literally only a social event. We barely ever even talked politics the other night.
Correct, yeah.
It's just fun to kind of bond with other libertarians that are in your area. So, we'll have more information about that rolling out, but for now, the best way is join the Liberty and Chill presented by We Are Libertarians Facebook group, and let Harry and Paul Copeland, mm-hmm. your partner in crime, your deputy to the deputy leader, and they'll get you set up. So, fun times, lots of interesting things going on in We Are Libertarians land.
I'm loving this like chat on YouTube tonight. This is awesome.
Yeah, we are streaming to YouTube. We have a YouTube page, and let me just say, we need some help. Two things: we need you to go and subscribe to our Twitch channel. It is We Are Libertarians, because James Neese wrote We Are Libertarians and then forgot the password and the email that he used, mm-hmm. which is why I hate when people do anything in our branding that I don't have control over.
So that's why the moment I created it, I gave him everything.
Right. So, yes, we need how many more?
14.
We need 14 more subscribers to hit some magical button.
We need 14 more followers, just followers, not subscribers, followers.
Okay.
We need 14 more followers on the Twitch channel, and then we're able to make become affiliate on Twitch.
Mm-hmm.
That allows us to take, one, the ad revenue off there, so like for, through cheers, or even get and get subscribers. Subscribers
right.
are different on Twitch. Twitch sees subscribers as people who subscribe and pay money to a channel.
Right.
And with the way that, and since Twitch is owned by Amazon, you can use your Amazon Prime subscription. Like, if you're an Amazon Prime member, you can link that to your Twitch account, and then the channel that you subscribe to can get $5 free from just from using your Amazon Prime account.
Right. So we need you to do that. And yeah. then we are demonetized on YouTube. So it, we need 1,000 subscribers. We're at like 550. We've added about 50 in the last couple weeks, as I've been asking. Please go and subscribe to our YouTube page. We'd greatly appreciate it. It's just search We Are Libertarians and you'll find us. We post the videos of every single show, so you can go and watch us on the big screen. Like, I watch a lot of podcasts on YouTube at work, and we are just like that. We post all the video and the audio up on YouTube, so you can watch us there. And please be sure to get the email newsletter. That is enough class announcements for today. Let's get into the subject matter at hand, which is me going to a women's march. Now, Harry, when I told you I was going to the women's rally on Saturday, what did you think?
One, you know, I figured you would go there to, you know, and be careful, because with your new beard and manliness, I don't think you'd be welcome there. So I feared for you.
Right.
Your safety, really.
And I wore flannel.
Oh, man. Feared for your safety. You know, because if you went there with your flannel and you shaved, you know, I don't have to worry about you.
Yeah, because they'd get me confused with the participants.
Yes, yes, exactly. But and the other thing is, the my other reaction was, why?
Right. Well, my friend Michelle invited me, and the reason any man does anything is because a woman was behind it, and she's just my friend. But she asked me if I wanted to attend, because she knows that while I am not necessarily I'm a feminist. Here's how I would describe myself in terms of a feminist. Like, everyone should have the same opportunity starting out. Women should not be discriminated against based on their gender. I don't believe that if a man and a woman are doing two exact similar jobs, that they should be, one should be paid less than the other if skills are equal. You know, so I feel like I'm a feminist in that I believe women should have the right to vote and should have all abilities and freedoms that men do. I'm not a third wave feminist. I'm not someone who thinks that, how do I put it? Men should be, I get the sense that I get a lot of times is they want men to be subjugated to women. Like, they want to flip-flop and they want it to be a matriarchy
mm-hmm.
instead of a patriarchy. Not all women. I'm talking about just a certain fringe element of the political discourse. And I'm not down with that, because if you want equality, I'm going to fight for that equality. I'm there, right there with you. But if you're saying stupid things and you're advocating for policies that I don't agree with, then I'm going to disagree with you. Would you call yourself a feminist, Harry?
No, I'm not a feminist.
Okay.
I can believe everything they want, but I think the label to me is way too tainted,
mm-hmm.
and it's especially here in the modern. Actually, I don't want to go too much in the weeds, but I think the label has always been tainted for the longest time. But that's going into a lot of different history that I will hijack this entire 2 hours going into,
right?
Which we can walk into that puddle one day, but not right now. But I think that everyone should have equality. I think the most of the rights that most people have, or most of the rights that women also fight for, I think that I like that. I like the idea. I can get behind that idea. I have no problem having sitting and talking with people who are feminists,
mm-hmm.
or even supporting the same cause, because a lot of the ideas they have are good ideas. You know, but some ideas that they have are also bad. They also have downfalls and stuff like that.
Right.
You know, there's not like, I don't really see like a good or bad to it, but I reject that label because of also a lot of the things that come along with that.
Right.
And a lot of the
I see, because like to me, a lot of modern day like feminism for me, it really does look more like socialism in panties to me. It's they use a lot of government force to bring on a lot of Marxist socialist crap into my life, and I'm just like, and I reject that.
Right.
But I can understand when people want to take that pure label, like I just looking for equality through people to the sexes, and I get
right.
that, and I can understand people's feeling from that, and I get that, I get it. You know, me personally, I'm an egalitarian. If you want to give me a label for in that type of sphere, but at the same time, it's like you know, I want all things to be equal and at all things at all times. And I, you know, I respect female agencies just the same way I respect male agency.
Right. Yeah, I think that if you're an individualist and if you aren't an individualist, then you're not a libertarian. And if you're not a libertarian, you're probably a libertarian if you're listening to the show. You're certainly welcome to listen and get a feel. but yeah, I think individualists believe that everyone starts out with an equal right, equal opportunities, equal application of laws, and it's pretty hard to be an anti-feminist and a libertarian at the same time. That being said, I think you can disagree with a lot of what is defined as feminism. Like, when you say feminism, I think you're right. The term, it's kind of like neocon. It started out one way, and now it means something else. Liberal started out meaning libertarian, and now it means progressive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one of those words that probably in the beginning we'd all agree with, but now we're going, I'm not one of these pink-haired people.
Right.
You know?
Especially, like, with the TERFs and the SWERFs and the all that other garbage that that's also with the everything that they have.
Right.
You know?
So...
Yeah, just like Chet Reynolds said, equality of opportunity, not an equality of result, though.
Right.
You know?
So, I went to the rally with my friend, and I wasn't sure what I was going to find. I had an idea. I mean, and this is something that I like to do. I like to challenge myself to go to places or to read things or to watch things or listen to things that I know I'm not going to agree with. Because I want to understand the arguments. I want to understand the conversation around them. And that's why I went. Because it's not an endorsement of what was said on the stage. Because I couldn't find much that I agreed with from the bullhorn. So I like to go to things just to kind of get a sense of things. Of where we're at as a culture. Where we're at as political movements. And I found it to be predictable and surprising in some ways. So the predictable parts. It was at the Indiana State House. I would say there was 3,000 to 4,000, 5,000 women, but a lot of men too. You know, the men ranged from your typical liberal, like why I don't know why liberal men have such small faces. Like they have like they wear a small hat size. Like I don't know why liberal men just seem to have smaller heads. But a lot of those guys, a lot of scarf wearers, a lot of designer jeans, and then t-shirts bemoaning poverty. A lot of those guys, all the way to one biker that I was standing next to. And when somebody brought up Mike Pence, the guy goes, he can't even ride a motorcycle. And I died laughing because it was like such a sincere slam on Mike Pence from this guy's point of view. And I started laughing, and he looked at me, and he realized what he said, and he started laughing too. And he goes, he can't. He fell off after 20 minutes. Not like Mitch Daniels. At least Mitch Daniels could ride a motorcycle. It was hilarious. And so I talked to them a little bit. They were super nice.
Yeah, that guy sounds awesome.
Yeah. What I generally found is it was probably 70% women, 30% men. And the men were all there with supporting their female family member or friends. There weren't a lot of men just showing up and hanging out. Unless they were part of the LGBT community. But it was a very communal event. It was a lot like a tea party where you had a large crowd of people and they were showing up to be a part of something, to be a part of a community, to share an idea, to see what other people were thinking in their like-minded sphere, to bond with each other around certain ideas. And in that respect, I really felt a lot of similarities between them and the Tea Party. And I loved people in the Tea Party. Like, I always hated when people bashed on Tea Party members because the Tea Party members that I got to know and talk to and have conversations with at the dozens of Tea Parties that I visited and, you know, rallies that I went to between 2009 and 2011, they were, by and large, really decent people. And they were willing to listen to a libertarian and have a conversation with them and argue back and forth in a respectful manner. It's just when they got on Facebook that you have these avatars of people in your mind, and you go, okay, well, this must be all Tea Partiers, all these baby boomers, and so they're all bad. And when you go and meet these people face-to-face, you go, oh, they're regular Americans. They're the people checking me out at the grocery store. They're the people selling me insurance. They're the people that are teaching my kids to drive. It's just regular Americans. And so I saw a lot of the same exact signs at the Women's March that I saw at the Tea Party March. I'll see if I can't pull up my Twitter and read the actual sign, but the people in the crowd, I agreed with 99% of the signs. There was only one sign that I saw that I had disagreed with, and it was healthcare is a right.
Yeah.
But by and large, it was all about we should be against racism, we should be against bigotry, we should be against hatred, we should be against inequality. Like, these are things that we agree with.
Yeah.
These are principles that we agree on.
Yeah. And also to remind everyone, Spangle went to the Women's March in Indianapolis.
Right.
And in Indiana, nice good old red Indiana, and not Las Vegas, LA, or
lot of just regular moms.
Yes. Yeah.
A lot of moms hanging out at the Chili, drinking wine at the canvas with their friends. So
that Chick-fil-A line had been long.
Oh, yeah. And
no, it was a Sunday. Chick-fil-A's closed.
Yeah, it was Sunday, and was it Sunday? No, it was Saturday.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was a Saturday, and it was the one-year anniversary of the last year's march. And, you know, the sign said, when injustice becomes law, resistance becomes duty. That's the same exact argument that Tea Partiers were making, that Barack Obama was creating a sense of injustice and that it was their duty to resist and paying too much in taxes. It started out as taxed enough already. That was something that was the singular issue that everybody rallied around. Just as last year, women rallied around the idea that they're not second-class citizens, and somebody who thinks in, you know, 1970s male terms towards women is not something that they're going to support. And if you don't like what is going on, then you should get together. You should run for office. You should oppose it. And 390 out of 435 House races as of now have a female candidate. So that's got to be the largest in history. I mean, there's no way that there's ever been a time where there's been that many women running for office. And that's good.
Written history, anyways.
Right. I'm sure maybe, you know, the Nubians back in the day.
Well, you know, there's a lot of cases that there was a lot of, like, a female, there's different female ran cultures in Africa and certain parts of Southern Asia. There's a lot of different ones where women control the money and stuff like that. But, you know, that's different. We're talking about, like old different culture. But, yeah, it's nice to see that the women also have the, not the ability or the advantage or the right, but just see that they feel that they can.
The empowerment.
Right? Yeah, they feel. Yeah. Well, the other thing is they've had it, women have had it for a while. And it's not like it's not a new thing. It's just more of meh, we'll just do this next.
Right.
It's not. There's nothing really standing in someone else's way for the longest time other than the will to want to do that.
Yeah.
Or even the thinking that they could win doing it.
Yeah.
You know, I can see that too, because a lot of people are stuck behind like, well, can I even win? I know I have the right and the ability to do that, but can I win?
Right. So we're talking in this episode a lot. In terms of this segment of women in 2018, and next episode we'll talk about men in 2018. But I, like I said, in terms of what I saw on the stage, in terms of what I saw in the crowd, I didn't disagree with those people. They looked like my peers. And this is, I think, a key part of what we have to do if we don't want to eventually devolve into some level of civil war. You have to start going to stuff like this and finding the places that you agree, finding the principles in which you agree. I agree with opposing inequality. I agree with female equality. I agree that women, that my nieces should grow up with a sense of empowerment and should have in their mind no, they should be safe, they should be secure, they should be guaranteed an equal starting point. I agree with those things. The part of the rally that I disagreed with was the stage. And it was a four-hour rally. It started at one point and walked to another. And let me just say, like, if you're planning a rally, don't march. No more marches. Nobody likes the marches. They don't do anything. It annoys the cops. Like, you lose people as you're moving forward. You don't get the big photo that you need. Like, just have a rally at the state house or the city capitol or whatever market. Like, the march is where you start to, like, lose people. Like, half the people probably didn't even show up to the state house. I got there for the second act. And it was 2 hours of speeches, and everybody had 5 minutes to talk. And they ended right on time. They started on time. So when I say to you it was a two-hour block, they had previously done 2 hours of speeches. This was a two-hour block of 5 minutes of every progressive cause getting a chance to speak from the stage. 50% of the speakers were male, and because they were representing the Latino community or the Black community or this advocacy group or that advocacy group. And I found that to be interesting. You know, I mean, it was astroturfed, and it's so much like the person I was with essentially said she was disappointed in it, because it seemed like the year before there was a real camaraderie, there was a real spirit to it. The stage wasn't as planned. It was much more freeform. You had people talking who were speaking to a central issue. And then this year, it was basically every progressive group getting up and taking advantage of the stage time to push donations for their cause. And that included such stupid issues as vote by mail.
I got that in the mail. That sucked. I hated that so much. I'm glad sending that back.
Let me explain something to you. The voter fraud issue on both sides is bunk. Okay? If you think that elections are being stolen by Republicans or by Democrats, go work as a poll worker. You and your county have the ability to go to your county clerk and say, I want to be a judge. I want to work the polls, because the clerks are begging for people to work the polls. If you want to personally ensure that your local area does not have voter fraud, you can do that. It's going to mean that you can have to get your lazy ass off the couch or take a day off of work to go do your civic duty. You can go and watch how the process works. Now, what are you laughing about?
It's the most god-awful, boringest job.
That's right. Ever. It's boring because there's nothing exciting going on at the polls.
Nothing.
Nobody's stealing anything.
You'd hope for fraud.
Right. I've been involved in two campaigns. One was won by 3 votes. One was won by 14 votes in 2003 and 2004. And I've been through the recount process, and I see how scrupulous they go over these two local elections, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which all elections are local. Every election's run at your county level, all right? So don't give me this national, they rig the Diebold machines, you're wrong. You're just flat out stupid. You're creating conspiracy theories. You go and watch how they do a recount, and you will see how much of a fine-tooth comb they go through every single ballot. And it's just, there's no there. And these were races that were expected to be close. Those are the races you cheat in.
Yeah, because there's like one person counting, one person over the person counting,
right?
Double checking. Okay?
And then and then there's a Republican, a Democrat, and a Libertarian in Marion County, and each of the candidates, and then the lawyers. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's insane. And so, I mean, I've been around politics for 15 years at a very local level. Like, I've served on election commissions. I've been intimately involved in the voting process here in Indiana. I've never seen anything that came close to voter disenfranchisement or voter fraud, ever.
Yep.
Okay, and this is a city with 1 million people in this county.
And they wish stuff happens. Like, I remember one time at one election, someone was trying to hand me election material and stepped 1 foot
too close.
Right.
And just watched him get off the chair. Oh, you're too close to right. me. I was like, man, she must have been just watching.
Yeah.
She just needed something.
Right.
I was like, and I felt so bad because he was just trying to hand me stuff. And I knew who I was going to vote for. I knew the race. And I was like, you know, just wanted Chris Mayo on. And, you know, and I just like, nope, here for Chris Mayo. On my way.
Right.
You know, and try to step past them.
Yeah. So the idea that we have that people are being turned away at the polls are unable to vote, like the vote by mail thing,
I don't want. No one wants vote by mail unless they are like interim and can't leave. And those people have the ability to vote by mail.
It's called an absentee ballot.
Yep.
And if for some reason those people can't get an absentee ballot or something goes wrong on election day, the county clerk, at least in our county and the surrounding counties, has a roving team of people. Like when Rex Bell mm-hmm. had a stroke before the 2016 election, the county clerk sent out a team to have Rex vote
yep.
a couple days before the election.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you are in a situation where you're not physically going to make the polls and you don't have an absentee ballot, they will come to you. You have to take personal responsibility and set it up.
Yep.
But vote by mail is an easy way to cheat.
Correct. This is you know, if you want to see fraud happen, it'll probably be by the mail system.
Exactly.
Because, you know, like, there's so many people that do not vote, right? So people already take credit card things out of people's other mail slips. What else do you think you're going to take out?
Right.
Majority of the people do not vote. So let you go, like, you know, so really the winner, the popular vote, every election is none of the above.
Right.
Not many people vote. But anyway,
yeah.
Like, you know, it's crazy, the like, the lack of people that... that also have like all these misconceptions about voting
uh-huh.
that voting should be a day off, and I'm like, you know, there's laws. You have the ability to vote. Well, I've got work. Well, as long as when the polls are open, if you work, your entire shift is between when the polls open and when the polls close. The place that you work at, right, is required by law to allow you to get time off to go do this. Now, you are not paid. Do not expect to be paid for that. This is your civic duty. Quotation mark, civic duty. You're not to get paid for this, but you have the ability to clock out, go vote, come back, and go back to work, and they can't do anything about it. But you also will not be paid, and the reason most people don't want to do it, because they don't want to not be paid for that, which
right.
I understand. Hey, you probably get, depending on how much you make an hour, you probably get more out of your life if you don't go vote and just stay and get paid.
Uh-huh.
Or just fill out an absentee ballot. What?
Right.
Like, what is it, like a 2 months before?
If you know you can't take the time off, then get an absentee ballot. Or go, you can physically drive to the clerk's office and mm-hmm. vote at the clerk's office.
Yeah.
And Indiana's voting with voting centers and getting rid of precincts and now, like, centralizing them in voting centers. And I'm all for it. Because those voting centers are open, like, 9 to 5 for 2 weeks. You know, so you can take a half a day to go vote. You have 2 weeks to plan time to vote. I'm okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to me, that's a great idea. Make it easier on people, but make it easy on people in a way that the two parties can't cheat anymore. They've already got us bent over a barrel because of gerrymandering, because of straight ticket voting,
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
of because they're owned stock and barrel by both by the entire media apparatus.
Yep, the way they debate, just like a libertarian trying to do anything in District 7. You know, you might be able to get the Republican to debate you, but you're not going to get Andre to debate you, at least not on your terms.
Absolutely. So,
which, like, honestly, I think is the best strategy to beat Andre. It's like, get with a Republican and act like Andre's not even running.
Yeah, so I heard dumb things like this from the stage. You know, you heard one woman, they're going to steal health care for all. It's like nobody's stealing health care. Like, nobody's stealing.
They're stealing health care.
Like, health care is being taken away from women. I wish Snopes were on the side. I told my friend, I said, I should be Snopes. I should be up there with the microphone fact-checking everything these people say.
Mm-hmm.
And you just see through the day, like, people leaving the march. And one participant told me that she left feeling disappointed because she was white-shamed by the Black Lives Matter activist who got stage time. And, you know, was told white women are not doing enough for black women. And she's just like, but I'm here. You know, well, you're not making enough of an effort. Okay, well, I'm here. This is you know, what... What do you want me to do instead of chastising me? Give me orders. You know, so she was just very disappointed in the rally, too. It was just a parade of every progressive idea. And it reminded me so much of those tea parties where the 2009 Tea Party's like, I went to a We Surround Them event that Glenn Beck did in 2009, 2010, and the Baneys basically rented out this place in Fishers and live streamed the Glenn Beck event, and like 500 people showed up to this event center. And it was spontaneous, and everybody was like excited, and there was electricity. Mm-hmm. And then you had the tea parties through 2009 and 2010, and they were a lot of fun. But then, like in 2010, they weren't as good as the 2009 ones because you started to see like, oh, Americans for Prosperity's here, and mm-hmm. you know all these major groups like you know.
Okay, that's cool.
There's freedom works. Like they're
passing
all
out some pamphlets. That's okay.
Right.
That's okay. It's but then, freedom.
But then the next year, they're the ones planning the tea party, gathering your information, and then for the rest of your life, you're getting mailers from Republicans because you signed up at a tea party in 2009. Mm-hmm. And that's like the opposite of what tea partiers were all about. And then the movement goes from very focused on being taxed too much
yep.
to this muddled, everybody on the right is throwing their ring in the hat and saying, this is what the Tea Party is about.
I'm a Tea Party candidate.
Right, which is why you should vote for me or give me money. You know, candidates start speaking. Now, to the credit of the Tea Parties here in Indiana, they banded together pretty well, and they made it a point to not let candidates speak on the stage. And I, even though I was involved in the planning of a lot of this stuff early on, and they allowed me to be, but they were very suspicious because I was going to, quote-unquote, take them over. It's like, well, you'd have to let me take you over. Like, and there's not that many libertarians, so the coup's probably not going to be as effective. I'm here to help because I'm passionate about not paying as many taxes and changing society back to a constitutional government, and I have professional experience. Well, we don't want your professional experience, but then a Koch-funded organization comes along and, oh, we'll take your experience because you're Republicans. You know, and like Ned Ryan's son started American Majority, a training session, and it basically mm-hmm. was a backdoor way for candidates or for Tea Party people to get training, activist training, from the people that the major conservative movers and shakers in D.C. wanted them to get to know and have a personal. It became, you know, a rubber chicken dinner circuit for the right to put establishment conservatives in front of Tea Party people and therefore grace them with the Tea Party label. And the whole movement just got completely co-opted, and people abandoned the movement, and then all that was left were the religious right and the conspiracy theorists.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, it was done, and it was disappointing. And the coverage was always completely negative. You know, Jim Shella here in Indianapolis, one rally, which was held by Melissa Donaghy, she was one of these rallies where she let anybody up on stage who was, you know, on her team, basically, and had 15 different messages coming from the stage. And so Jim Shella, the head political reporter in the state at the time, puts out this piece about how it's unfocused and completely butchers a video of me, making me look like I don't know what I'm talking about and I'm an idiot. I give 45 seconds of perfectly fluid sound bites, mm-hmm. and then I kind of like sputter at the end and I go, bah, 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 we're all fed up. That's what he used. You know. And the message was, they're unfocused. They're unfocused. Well, the message about the Tea Party from the media, like with the Tea Party, it was always, they're angry. They're so angry.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's, they're so brave. These women are so brave.
Yeah, yeah. It's just an underlying message, like the basement of the fake news, like that. You know, and it's gonna be weird to watch how the mainstream media does start treating a lot of these women's marches, especially when they start having them every year, and whether or not, like, will these marches continue when their own person get in power? Will they continue to go after this person?
Well, I'm going to play something. Glenn Beck was really instrumental in organizing a lot of the Tea Party.
Yeah, which is Glenn Beck, not Slenderman Stone.
And Glenn Beck basically put a really interesting montage together and has some interesting points in this little segment. And then it ends with a montage of the difference in the media coverage between the Tea Parties and the Women's March. And so the first voice you're going to hear is Rob Reiner speaking at the Women's March on Saturday in Washington, D.C.
We were all here a year ago for many different reasons. But one of the unifying reasons was we were scared. We were scared of who was going to enter the White House. A year has gone by, and he has corroborated every one of our fears. And we cannot whitewash this anymore. We have a racist in the White House. We have a sexist in the White House. We have a pathological liar in the White House. And he is tearing away at the fabric of our democracy. And when we all came together last time, we had the power. And it's the women.
Okay, stop.
I can't take it anymore. Stop.
Do you remember? Do you remember 828? Do you remember going to Washington? Do you remember this time? And do you remember that the media was looking for signs? They were looking for anything. They needed a sign that said Barack Obama is a Marxist. They needed it. Barack Obama is a liar. We want our government back, because that was proof that you were out of control, nuts. You were a revolutionary. You were anti-government, and you were a racist. They're just fear-mongering. And what happened? We gathered, and the press didn't even notice. They still tried to make it about something else. Not once did they say, wow, maybe there's something else happening here. Maybe this is about something bigger than just Barack Obama. Nope. They could not do it. Imagine had I given that exact speech on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. Imagine if I said half of those things on that day. What would have happened to me? They are so certain that they are right. They lack all self-reflection. I'm going to give you a little montage here. Because I learned a lesson. You cannot think out loud. You can't question. You can't look at somebody's record of life. You can't look at their words. Well, that's just the way white people will do you. You can't look at their books. Well, my grandmother had it bred into her to fear black people. You can't look at the record of where they went to church, Jeremiah Wright. And you can't look at what they're doing, the police acted stupidly, and say, you know what? I think this guy has a problem with race. You can't do that. You're a racist if you ask, is the president racist? Does the president have some racist tendencies? Is the president misinformed? Is the president out of step with regular America? Oh my gosh, what's regular America? How dare you? You mean white America, don't you? You're a racist.
I mean,
that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, and Beck's career, really, the reason that you probably are rolling your eyes that I'm playing a Glenn Beck clip stems from his comments about Barack Obama. An episode he did on Fox where he started talking about the roots of Barack Obama and his relationship to the black community and his relationship and attitude towards whites.
Mm-hmm.
And he did what every single journalist, quote-unquote, new TV news presenter, Rachel Maddow, MSNBC, even the left-leaning people on Fox, all questioning if Donald Trump's a racist. Now, Donald Trump gives them plenty of racially charged, if not absolutely racist, statements, right?
Like on the regular.
Right. Like, regularly. Yeah, yes. Like, it's... I was thinking today it's a miracle that anybody's having a conversation about anybody other than Trump right now about this government shutdown, and he's not involved.
Right. But they try their damnedest, though.
So I get why he's pissed when his career really was absolutely damaged by taking his... He was Jordan Peterson before Jordan Peterson was Jordan Peterson, right? If you haven't, and we will go through it next episode, the Jordan Peterson interview with this presenter in Britain, where she just basically takes everything he says out of context, and she paraphrases what he thinks, puts negative spin on his thoughts, instead of dealing with his thinking out loud and trying to understand our world today and get feedback, he's politically destroyed. You know, it happened to Milo Yiannopoulos. Said a lot of crazy, effed up things, but in the context of what he was saying, he was trying to make a specific point. You may not agree with the point, but at least give him the benefit of the doubt and listen to him first. And that's one of the things that I always try to do, is I try to give somebody the benefit of the doubt, listen to the context or the story as much as you can, grab that story, and then make your decision from there. Like, the Aziz Ansari thing, you go, yeah, he wasn't a choir boy here. But is he Harvey Weinstein?
No. Not even close.
Like, because the media has just become a machine of destruction. And they take one thing you say out of context and then just propagandize it over and over and over until it's the truth, to the point that even your allies won't defend you. And that's what this montage is about. So I get him being pissed off about that double standard.
God forbid you do that. Or is it suddenly okay?
I'm not saying that he doesn't like white people. I'm saying he has a problem. He has a... This guy is, I believe, a racist.
Glenn Beck in the news.
How is it possible that this guy can sit on national television and call the president of the United States a racist?
This president sees everything through a racial prism.
About
and
Trump.
May even have his own racist.
I wish we would just stop this. Glenn Beck and people like that need to stop
the notion
this.
Now, Donald Trump, it reinforces his animus, his racially driven animus, his racism, that he demonstrates it over and over again from the Oval Office.
You know, throwing out the R word, the racist word, and some other words are conversation stoppers. We're never going to get past the point where the Glenn Becks of the world will just hurl that out at people.
What more do we need to see or hear from this racist man? Not only is he racist, he is an embarrassment.
These are the birthers.
Yes.
This is the narrative.
But they want
the man to fail,
yes.
And now they're labeling, he's a racist.
But it doesn't make what he said any less ignorant or any less racist. Not racial, not racially charged.
Now,
as long as Glenn Beck is out there calling the president a racist or anyone else a racist, we're never going to get past this point of constantly reacting to racial flare-ups.
Do you think President Trump is a racist?
I think he is a racist.
I see it with both Glenn Beck and with Rush Limbaugh. These guys with really suspect racial feelings and perceptions are projecting their own hate and their own divisiveness.
And it's the same sentiment, Chris, and it's something that virtually everyone recognized right away. It is racism.
It's such a blunt object of racism. When you say racism, it's a big charge.
Oh, it's a huge... I find it awful. I think you have to be very careful.
And then
with
secondly,
it.
There's the racial angle. I don't think there's any getting away from the color of people from Norway as opposed to people coming from Haiti, Africa.
I think a lot of that is simple grandstanding, making outrageous statements, provocateur.
Refuse to show any moral courage when it comes to standing up to the racist comments made by the President of the United States.
I can't believe it, first of all. Glenn Beck owes the President an apology. He owes the American people an apology.
We take this additional, very clear racist thing. He's an evil man.
This is an insult to our democracy, our way of life.
We have to start calling things what they are. We have to stop asking if this person is a racist, because the evidence is there. He
and
is.
I hate giving someone who says something like that any more attention. Outrageous is one way of putting it. I would say irresponsible.
If you put Haiti next to Norway, as Donnie said, is a black and white issue, the way the president laid it out yesterday.
If someone on the left...
This is all Morning Joe. This is them saying Glenn Beck calling the president racist is despicable, and now they're calling Trump racist. And he's hanging them by their own words.
Had called George Bush a racist on TV, would we be throwing our hands up? Would we be so outraged?
Yes.
Would we demand an apology?
Yes.
We would?
I would.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Really?
Yeah.
I would. Sure.
Yes.
So he basically ends it with Morning Joe saying, you know, if Glenn Beck had called George Bush a racist, would we be asking for an apology? Absolutely.
Yeah.
So it is... Again, it's Glenn Beck saying, I think that he has a problem with white people, or there's some sort of relationship to white people that is problematic, and I want to have a discussion about this, and then he's completely destroyed by it. And this charge of racism is the left's favorite charge because it means that they don't have to deal with any of your ideas. Identity politics, practiced on both sides of the aisle, but nurtured on the left, is a way to completely ignore. It's ad hominem attack. It's a logical fallacy. I'm not listening to you because I don't believe that you're of a rational actor. It's why the term conspiracy theorist is a dangerous term in a lot of ways. Like 25% of what Alex Jones says is probably right. 25% is absolute batshit crazy, and 50% is just self-promotion and vitamin sales and hyperbole. I'm not bragging. I've been with 150 women by 16. You know, right. You know, he's but to call him a conspiracy theorist means that you never have to deal with anything he ever says. You know, at least some people try to listen to Alex Jones and say, here's why this isn't true. Here's the opposite evidence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the people who just outright say, oh, he's just, you know, anybody associated with the right. There was a rally this weekend with a lot of, they call themselves the New Right, which I've got a book about the New Right from the 70s, 60s, I think. Checked out from the library right now.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I had The Politics of Fear, I think is the name of it.
So now it's the old right?
Right, yeah. And it's basically talking about the new right, and it's talking about the John Birch Society. And so the new right was the term for the alt-right in the 60s, and now they're calling themselves the alt-right. And it's funny to see people like Gavin McInnes and Mike Cernovich and some of these other Anna Kate. I'm not alt-right. Those people are racists. I'm new right. But what is wrong with all these black people and trans people are actually like, then they go on to say insensitive stuff. And it's just like, dude, you're undermining your own argument just because you say you're racist. And then you like provoke by saying racially charged statements. You're just like, you're just looking for a fight. You're not trying to be intellectually honest. But anyways, they had a night for freedom and they had to move the venue several times because Antifa and these venues kept getting too much harassment, so they just shut down the speech. And it's like Jordan Peterson said in that interview with the Channel 4 lady, you have to risk being offensive to have a discussion of ideas. How can you have an honest debate about ideas if you're not going to run the risk of being offensive? And I generally believe offensive is not an actual thing. Like, have you ever been offended, Harry?
No.
Right.
No. I've seen the other things that have shocked me, but not like outright, like, wow, I'm like outrageously offended.
Shock is an emotion.
Yeah.
Fear is an emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Anger is an emotion. Offended is not an emotion.
Right.
Offended doesn't exist in the range of human emotions, in my opinion. Like, and if somebody says they're offended, I just think they're lying. They're trying to make a political point.
Yeah, that's true. I think the only times I've ever used the word, like, really offended and actually meant it has been when I was LARPing. Yeah, usually when I LARP.
Right. When you're role-playing.
Yeah, when I'm role-playing. I like, especially when we're role-playing, like, being in, like, a feudal court, I will be offended. I'm getting offended quite often.
Right. So this charge of racism against your political opponents is just an insidious ad hominem attack. It's really vile, and it's anti-intellectual, and college-educated whites tend to skew liberal now, and they consider themselves intellectually superior to libertarians and conservatives. And yet they engage in conversational techniques that are just dishonest, mm-hmm. that aren't true, that are propagandist. And I think that's why you've seen the rise of this whole industry of provocateurs on the right who see it as their job to take that charge, turn it around, and go, so? Like, that was always Andrew Breitbart's retort when somebody would say, you're X, Y, and Z. So? Because then you just immediately neutralize exactly what they're trying to say about you. Instead of trying to defend, like, if somebody is going on and calling you a racist, just go, I'm not a racist, but thank you. Mm-hmm. Like, don't even engage. Like, the more you try to prove yourself,
yeah.
the more pathetic you look, and you've fallen into their little trap, because they're not being honest dealers. And so much of what I saw at the Women's March was just not dealing in honest conversation. It's really a bummer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's easier. It's that easier tactic, because once again, if you have to fight with a straw man versus a regular man in front of you, and I'm using man as in like human, you know, the species of man, not just because, you know, Chris over here and he's a white male, but just, you know, and it's that just that, and it's easy for them to dehumanize, to attack you this way, because then when you're a racist, now you're another. Right. I don't have to treat you like a human anymore. And then once I've said racist, everyone else who has also heard that will now also not treat you like a regular person.
Right.
You're now another to all everyone around us. Mm-hmm. And then it makes your brain, well, I don't want to be another. I want to be in the tribe. I want to be with the tribe. I want to be with everyone else.
Right.
Your brain starts freaking out. You know, that's why you get like upset and you're like, wait a minute, I'm not. This is not what I am, because, you know, that's an othering term. You know, mm-hmm. this is how you excommunicate people out of tribes.
Yeah.
You know,
and rejection is an incredibly powerful tool, because it plays on the lizard brain inside your head. And I've had this conversation in terms of romance with a lot of friends lately who are sad because they feel rejected. Like, well, the reason that you are sad about that is because your brain is biologically bent towards being accepted by a group. Because for tens of thousands of years of humanity, we were pack animals in a group, fighting mm-hmm. mastodons and tigers and
6 foot tall penguins.
And 6 foot tall penguins and dinosaurs, if you believe Ken Ham. But your brain relied on the group. And so we are built to be in a group, a small group of other human beings that we share a tribe with. You know, I've got my great group of friends. I've got my Weird Libertarians tribe, and, you know, add on that Jeff Vibbert and Caitlin Kopetsky and some, you know, friends from my Bob and Tom work and or the day job, I should say. So I try never to bring that. They're very anti-politics, and I am too. I don't like mixing my peanut butter with my chocolate. So I try to avoid mentioning where I work just because I don't want them to have to be associated with me. Yeah. But... Yeah. So that's why I'm always careful to not bring that up, because I just don't want to mix those two. So
he may charge you for every time you bring up the show.
Right. So, you know, I've got my tribe of friends. A lot of people go to church to find a small group and find meaning in that. People like fantasy football leagues because it gives them a central point of connection, a reason to talk to each other through several months of the year and to get together. And, you know, I was on this podcast called Juice in the AM. And I think Justin Kelly was his name, Juice. Great podcast here out of Indianapolis. And he had like a full wrestling belt for his fantasy football thing. And I'm just sitting there going, well, this is really weird. He's got like a belt. Like, is that immature?
It is. Come on.
And then
Come
I went, on. No, it's not. And I'll tell you why. Because it is
Come on.
Perfectly. Listen, nerd. Okay? You and your Discord friends play video games every Friday night in the Discord chat for Weird Libertarians.
Like a normal group of people.
Right. No. Like, yes, normal for you, because you've found the birds that you flock together with. And so I was like, you know what, that's actually really cool, because that's a great way for them to bond. Sports is a way for guys to bond with each other. Video games is a way for guys to bond with each other, or to ignore their wives, but...
I prefer dice, personally. Love getting right. together with a group of people and roll some dice.
Shooting peas.
Somebody like made me crawl some dungeons.
So you you have these various reasons, and so when you're in a group, if you were to be cast out of that group, rejected by that group, that's a major ego wound. And what that does is it sends you spiraling because it's certain death for your prehistoric brain. So rejection's very difficult. And the idea of shame is built into that. Shame was the tool that our brain used to keep us in the right lanes. Shame, if I do this, then I will be shamed by the group, and if I get shamed enough, I will be cast out and I will be dead. The left has weaponized shame. And people who use identity politics on the left and the right weaponize shame. I don't want to be Ben Shapiro and just beat up on the left here. It's just the left.
But the right, yeah, the right does that to shame. The libertarians do it.
Yeah.
Status, that's status thinking. That's, you know, you're crazy and you know who you are when you go like, that's just anarchist. You're an anarchist. You're one of those other anarchists over
right.
there. You can just go over there and be with the others over there. You know?
Exactly. And we're tribalist creatures, so we can bemoan tribalist politics, but we're predisposed to it.
Yeah, your brain's going to do it.
But the reason that we reject tribalist politics is because it's lazy thinking, and We Are Libertarians is not about lazy thinking. It is about rising above your lizard brain and trying to achieve another plane and trying to organize society in a smarter way. Like, government is, to me, lizard brain thinking. Let's just give the power over to somebody else to control our lives. Like, in modern times of humanity, and I will put that from, like, Sumeria and ancient Egypt on to now, we've lived under rulers. And we have felt that that was the right way to organize society. Well, moving forward, especially in the age of artificial intelligence and technology, we're going to start organizing society according to libertarian principles. Individualism will be more important, and these small groups of people will be more important, and you're only going to see tribalism increase, but you're going to see the power of rulers decrease. Like, as we will get to at the end of this, like, what power does the government really have? They can't even pass a continuing resolution. They have to continually falter. And I think the New World Order that was outlined in the 20th century is starting to break down, and it will be in favor of a more libertarian world. And that's why it's so important for libertarians to lead the way in terms of intellectualism and thought and discourse and rise above the propaganda of the left and the right. Like, rise above it. Don't engage in it. Mm-hmm. Don't do the whataboutism. Like, I know you were a former Republican and now you're a libertarian, but, like, don't just hate the left because Trump tickles your ears.
Yeah, and if you're a former Democrat and now you're a libertarian, don't just keep hating the right.
Right, and yeah. So I wanna take this opportunity to give some perspective to the women's marches, because as I said before, I'm all for it. I'm all for engagement and building tribes and women running for office and women having equality. But what I heard from the stage was fascism, mm-hmm. was the road to tyranny. And both sides do it. The right and the left do it. Anytime you hear anyone trying to sell you something by making somebody else a scapegoat, they're manipulating you 100% of the time. And libertarians fall into this trap by making the government the scapegoat for all problems. And that's why I try not to do it. It's just the government. That's easy. That's lazy thinking. I'd be an anarchist because it would just be easier. We'd start the mics. We'd go, this week we're talking about the government shutdown. It should be shut down permanently. All right, thanks for coming by. We'll see you next week.
Boom.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Easy.
Oh, I feel better about myself. It was so easy. Wall spurt. Some shade from Harry Price. it's easy thinking. You want to end the government and you want to have an anarchist society, you've got about 300 years of progress that you've got to get started on right now. You know? Mm-hmm. And I'm at the forefront of that. You're not. You're taking the easy path out intellectually. The stage was white men were the problem with society. And I have a theory, and I'm going to think out loud. I'm going to fall into the Glenn Beck trap, and that's a lot of what this is I try to think out loud because I genuinely want to hear feedback from your perspective. sometimes I don't get time to write back to everybody that writes in, but I do read everything that you send. But I've got a theory about the women's marches, because men really love to make jokes and shit on these women marches. And I'm not a fan of that, because to me, like, if I were passionate about something and I felt that part of my identity was being demonized, I would want to fight against that. And I think men are starting to feel demonized. And it's partly their fault, but it's also largely the conversation and the way the conversation is structured. So I want to put the conversation about where women are at in a different paradigm and where men are at, because it came out of going to the women's march and then the next day having a conversation with some friends about household chores. And it's my group of friends talking about, you know, well, he does this and he doesn't do that and I never did this and when I was married I didn't do that and blah, blah, blah. And we're talking about this and it hit me. Millennial men are making a greater effort to shift gender roles than any generation in the history of mankind. They're actively trying to not be their dad's generation. Like, think about your dad. Like, my dad brags that out of three kids, he changed two diapers the entire time. You know, in our dad's generation, Harry, a stay-at-home dad, you'd be looked at a little bit queer.
Yeah.
We got this especially as a black man in the black community.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Your stay-at-home dad, Harry?
Yep. Yes, I am. I like it, and it's fun. You know,
right.
Anyone, like, really hanging around, like, Lacey and I, like, we question and move all kinds of different, like, gender roles like that, and people just don't understand that.
Right.
You know? And people try to give me crap about it. I'm like, dude, like, this works for us. This helps us out. I don't, you know? And it's not like we're doing this for, like, some, like, oh, we're doing this to fight the patriarchy. No, this just works for us.
Right.
You know, at this current time.
Two individuals making a personal choice as opposed to what does society say we ought to do?
Right.
What are the roles that Lacey and yourself must meet to care for Gunther?
Correct. Yeah.
And so you, as a millennial man, said, I don't care what society says gender roles are. I'm going to do what works for us. And nobody does anybody even actually really care or give you crap for it?
No. They do, like, if, jesting just because guys check each other. Guys is what guys do.
Guys tease,
yeah,
right.
We tease, we check each other. Or
It's that alpha ranking. Like, it comes from, you watch an ape show, I'm watching the monkey show on Netflix, monkey mm-hmm. something. Yeah, it's a ranking. Like, we don't fight with each other physically, we tease each other. That's how guys work.
Yeah, and it's mostly, and or if I do see any of that, it's like, if it's trying to be like real about it, it's more of like, once again, I'm going to other boomer again. You know, it's usually the older boomer types, but yeah. But mostly
what about
of it,
women.
No.
How do women react to it?
A lot. Some women like it. They respect it. They understand it. And a lot of them, I see a lot of women wanting, also helping me, giving me tips, uh-huh. lots of advice. And then there's some women that feels that it's, you know, and this is the rare one that, you know, they don't quite understand it, or they think I'm lazy mm-hmm. and I should just go get another job, which, you know, I'm not demon, you know, there's women that, there's men that do that to stay at home moms. Like, they're being lazy. They need to go out and, you know, get a job and bring home cash.
Right.
It's just how it is, you know, but I mostly get it from, like I said, it's, you know, most of those people that try to, they just don't understand this whole situation that we're in. And this wasn't all planned. This is a lot of the thing we just, like, kind of, fell into, you know?
Right.
It's kind of, it just kind of happened. And we just moved forward from it. But, of course, Lacey and I have been, like, this weird situation for the longest time. Like, when we first, like, really lived together, she was mostly the one that stayed at home all the time. And now, you know, I'm at a point in my life that I need to finish. I need to get to load up back up on my certification, and finally, she wants me also to finish my certification because we want to move to New Hampshire, so it's moving to a different place, and I want to keep a tech job. Mm. A lot of different places I go to apply for in Boston and New Hampshire, they want someone with a four-year bachelor's degree or the experience. I have the experience, but a lot of them, well, you know, I'm going to go with this guy. He's got close to experience that you have, but he's also got his bachelor's degree. And
right.
I'm like, yeah, but I've got more experience than this guy, but yeah, and I'm coming from out of state. So, like, I've got all these things stacked against me. So she figured it'd be better for me to work on my bachelor's degree and watch our kid, so that's not counted against me when I try to apply for jobs out there.
Yeah, and I think forcing people into gender roles is not good. Like we talked about during the Aziz Ansari, forced chastity is not good. Chastity by choice, I think, is a healthy choice.
And I will say,
for a lot of people,
the good. I'm going to say that I also said on the live stream on Twitch that the Aziz Ansari thing. The only good thing that's going to come about that is that it brought a conversation back to the Me Too movement. Mm-hmm. That's the only good thing that people questioning and commenting. It's no longer become listen and believe. Now the conversations are starting to happen. And right. I think that's the only good thing that come out of that, like, almost assassination attempt on his career.
So, you know, in this conversation about chores, I was like, has anybody really taught guys to do chores? Like, the main complaint that I hear from women about their men is that they don't do enough around the house. It's like, did your dad do chores? Did their dad do chores? Who taught them how to do chores? I know how to do chores because, like, the slave driver in the Exodus story,
mm-hmm.
that was actually based on my mother. She's Pharaoh. Like, I was born and bred to do chores around the house. I was not born as a son. I was born as a servant boy. And then my dad owned a janitorial company. But a lot of guys, like, I didn't know until 2 years ago how to put dishes in the dishwasher. Nobody taught me the proper way. Like, men in this generation are sitting there going, well, he didn't clean the countertop. Well, he doesn't know that you're supposed to clean the countertop. That's like you say do the dishes, we do the dishes. We don't clean the countertop. You say clean the kitchen, we do all of it.
Yes,
like,
it's the systems.
It's very, yeah.
Controlled systems.
Right. And I'm just sitting there arguing with these friends going, they're making the effort. They're just not doing the effort in the way that you want them to do the effort. Instead of being mad about them and nagging them, like, why don't you take a look at it from this perspective? This is the first generation of men willing to do housework.
Well, the other thing is, like, it's not that the men are willing to do housework. Men have, for years, have done housework. They've done husbandry.
Right.
Okay? That is taking care of the field, building posts, taking care of the car, all these other, what, quote-unquote, man things or husbandry around the house. Those things had to been happened. But now we've become more, most people have been, stop becoming more rural, more urban, or have things taken care of the house. So the only thing that can be done at the house after work is, you know, like the cleanliness or chores inside the house.
Right.
And it's, well, one, like, reason why men did, like, a lot of the building and stuff like that, because of the lack of tools. You know, regardless of what you want to say, it's harder for, it's not saying a woman can't build a fence, but it's so much easier for a 5'10" to 6-foot man to build a fence and hit a hammer with it. But now, with, you know, you can get smaller pieces of wood, electric hammer, you know, all these different, like, you know, tools to make the job easier. But, like, the other thing that was also, I noticed it's easier for my transition to also help around the house is because...
Oh, you're transitioning. Congratulations.
Okay, thank you. Welcome. But the ability that I have, because I actually took a home economics class, where most people... So I had shop and home ec. So not only can I sew and craft and make things and cook from home ec, I also had shop. So I also went to shop class, so I can work on cars, I can build things, it's what I know how to do. It's
mm-hmm.
I'm not the best, and Aaron Ewer can say that when he came over to my house and looks at some of my building woodworking screw, he was like, you need to call Tad, fix this. I'm like, it works, it's up there, you should probably call Tad.
Yeah, I gotta fix this. It's driving me crazy. Your microphone was off.
Does that affect anything?
No, it's just driving me crazy because it's not straight. I'm a little OCD. I'm on the spectrum. So I'm going to read something that I wrote that I literally just posted on Facebook.
Did you see Reynolds' comment? Old Cosby joke, men screw up chores so they're not expected to do it anymore. That's,
exactly.
Yeah, I feel like my wife did that one time. Like, I cleaned the entire kitchen, and she decided to have a midnight snack and make, you know, guacamole.
Right.
Well, she, like, made a mess of my pretty awesome kitchen. So when I woke up to have breakfast in the morning, I was like, had to clean everything before I made my coffee. I was like, what did she do?
So the broad cultural conversation in our lifetime as a 34-year-old man, the broad cultural conversation has been girl power, you know, starting with the Spice Girls and empower women and build them up, while the representation of men has largely been Seth Rogen, they're stoners, they're lazy. Men are lazy.
Mm-hmm. And dads are stupid, stupid fat idiots.
Right. And mm-hmm. and we really need to build women up because women are not thriving. And I think this has been a multi-generational thing. I think it started with the Gen X kids and has gone into millennials. It's certainly mm-hmm. happening with Gen Z. And part of what I want to kind of outline tonight and get you thinking about, and feel free to email me at editor@wearelibertarians.com to see where you think I might have missed the mark, because I'm genuinely having this conversation out loud because I want you to be aware. I understand that saying it's not as bad for women as they think, it's probably worse for men, is an offensive statement. But here's some facts, okay? This is all from Kay Heimowitz's Manning Up. It's a great book. That kind of talks about the immaturity of the modern man and how much women are thriving while men are not in this generation and the younger generations. Because if you look at the Me Too crowd and the abuses of power, it's a lot of boomers.
Mm-hmm.
They're abusing their power, but you know women are moving up the ranks, as you'll see. As of 2010, women earn more college degrees than men. Mm-hmm. In 67 of 120 countries, including Iran and America. Between 1975 and 2006, women with college degrees increased from 18% to 34%. So that's almost a doubling from 75 to 2006. Men went from 27 to 28%. They increased 1% in that time period. Women make up to 60% of graduates. By every indicator, women are outperforming men in testing and a desire for education. Women are more motivated to graduate college than men. They work harder at their education. For example, how many female friends studied abroad versus men? I have so many female friends that went abroad to study. I don't know a single guy that went in my generation to go study abroad.
Yeah, because they probably didn't have the opportunity.
Why would they not have the opportunity but a female student wouldn't? I call bullshit on that.
I don't. If you remember back like of the Obama era with like the Dear Colleague letter of and then all the Title IX stuff that has gone out to make it almost a most people want women in different programs, so they're motivated. There's more programs for them. Or when people are having like, you know, because one of the expenses of studying abroad is also finding somewhere to stay. Mm-hmm. Most people would jointly rent out a house to a young woman than they are to a young male. They don't want a young male in their house.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another expense. So that added an expense to that thing. This is another reason why some men aren't finishing college is because of that Dear Colleague letters, a lot of the Title IX crap for that stuff.
Right. Okay.
Fair
enough.
Yeah, it's a lot of layers on the thing on reasons. So it's just more like, well, why? What's the point?
Right.
You know, I can do that, or I can stay here and try to like, you know, get scholarships, or just try to get it done here.
So this new workforce has led a growth in a lot of different industries, and it's benefited society. So this is why it's good. It's good to give women equality, because as you increase women's ability to participate in the workforce, and you have a better educated workforce, you get new, better employable workers, right? That's a good thing. This has led to growth of the nonprofit and creative industries. The nonprofit industry has almost been completely spawned in the last 50 years because women are entering the workforce. They choose careers. This is why the wage gap is so disputed by people on the left, by people on the right, and libertarians, is because women choose careers that are more empathetic. They choose nursing, they choose teaching, they choose nonprofits, and those pay less. And they also drop out of the workforce because of pregnancy
mm-hmm.
and jump back in. And so when you have that 9%, 72% disparity, whatever number you're looking at, and that's an aggregate number. And we'll talk more about that next week.
And I'm doing my best to help mess with those numbers too.
Right. And yeah. but they choose careers that don't pay as well as engineering or owning a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1960, women were 6% of doctors and 3% of lawyers. So 1960, 6% of doctors. Now they're 49% of doctors. 1960, women were 3% of lawyers. They are now 47% of lawyers. Women in New York between 21 and 30 earn 117% of what men do. Mm-hmm. It's 120% in Dallas. This is as of 2010. Childless women are out-earning men in 147 of 150 of America's top cities. This is despite women choosing careers that earn less, such as education and nonprofits, versus engineering and business school. Women are entering those fields as at record numbers as well. Millennial women own homes at a higher number than men. In 2005, single women made up 21% of the real estate market, while men made up 10%. So we're in an apartment right now. And I would say 75% of the women I've dated over the last 4 years had a house, including people in their early 20s had a house. I did not. I don't plan on it. So a lot of single guys just don't opt for housing.
It's easier to move around and for a job. If you're single and you want to move around, it's easy to, you know, move and get a different, like if you've got a job in Chicago, job in Tennessee, you move, you know,
right.
If you're moving around all the time for your jobs, what's the point of getting a house?
Right.
You know, and it's easier to get a roommate in a, you know, an apartment and bank and save your cash.
Now, I realize what I'm about to say generalizes people, but it's based on my personal anecdotal evidence, dating hundreds and hundreds of women. That's where I'm going to insert the laugh track later. A lot of my female friendships, I generally find women in the millennial age bracket, my friends are more interested in engaging with their community, furthering their education, improving their body and soul, owning property, saving money, growing their career while raising kids. They're more interested in emotional and self-care, whereas men are more interested in their career, their sports, their immediate family, or hobbies. And so I just find women are excelling right now and men are not. And a lot of my male friends, and I know Harry hates when I beat up on things like video games, but men have largely, a lot of my friends have retreated to simple distractions. And I'm guilty of it too. I would say that social media for me is a huge distraction. It's my version of a video game or a fantasy football league. And we're finding meaning in hobbies as opposed to meaning in our community, in our spiritual life, in our physical life, in our family life. And we're less likely to make an effort in those areas. And it leaves women, as Jordan Peterson points out, like wondering where all the good men have gone. And I just find men my age are in a malaise, that there's a general malaise. And they see their female friends and family thriving with society encouraging their success, and the drumbeat of ending the patriarchy is taken personally by these men, and they resent that their female peers are doing better than they are while acting as if women are still oppressed. On that stage, I heard the keynote speaker say, "Every woman here is oppressed. She is," she didn't say, what was the word she chose? Suffering. She said, the women in this crowd are suffering. The men in this crowd are suffering. The LGBT community is suffering. The blacks are suffering. Like, are they?
No.
And I just looked at my friend and I go, are you suffering? Now, she's a social worker, so she goes, so she, you know, always does this jujitsu on me. And, you know, how are you feeling about this? And I said, the people who show up to a rally are not suffering. The
right.
people that you interact with in your job are suffering. The people who cannot make it to a rally because they're struggling to feed their kids are suffering. You listen to The Cost, our podcast series, those people are suffering. They're not – the majority of this country is not suffering. The majority of this country is thriving. Women, by and large, are thriving. Men are stagnant but still moving upward in a lot of ways in the millennial and Gen Z generations. Like, society is moving forward in positive ways, and we just have this attitude that everything is shit.
All right, to defend the guys in this whole thing, if you ask him, but you have to understand a lot of the men who are becoming 30 years old, right? They have watched their fathers, their uncles, right, get destroyed by a system that does not want them and only wants them monetarily.
Right.
Why in the heck would a lot of men want to, one, get married and confront some of the crooked system. They've watched, I can get on Facebook and easily like, hey, is there any dad? How many dads on this thing? How many dads on this Facebook page that can see this thing didn't get to see their kids for Christmas? Or if they did, they saw them 2 weeks later.
Right.
How many dads sat there like, why would you, most people don't want to have a family with a lot of these, like these women, because they're only, if they have a kid and something bad happens for this, they're probably only going to see their kids for about, what, 20 days out of the whole freaking year.
I probably have a conversation with a friend a month trying to figure out how to raise money to hire a lawyer, to pay their lawyer, to get more time with their kid because the court is so biased against men.
Yeah, yeah. Look at what Angelina Jolie did to Brad Pitt, okay? Mm-hmm. All this crap that she put out in the courtroom that he was abusive and do all this stuff to Brad Pitt. This is like a big case. Or some of the stuff that's going on with Johnny Depp, that happened with Johnny Depp and the Amber Heard stuff. That he was abusive, all this stuff, and she put all this stuff, but all that, now that's all taken away because what she really wanted, what they really got was money or control of the kids.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. So if, as a man, if you watched all this and saw all this crap, why in the living heck would you want to touch any of that?
Yeah.
If honestly, perfectly honest, if I really didn't have or found Lacey at the time and she wasn't the type of ride or die, you know, like libertarian that I have, dude, I'd be, you know, 30-something years old living in an apartment with a bunch of dudes living in bunk beds, banking all the cash, just building cars and just driving around. Why would the heck would I want to touch any of that crap?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, I understand that, get it, and full-hearted. That's why, like, it's a ticking time bomb to touch.
Yeah. So to continue on, when men try to explain this resentment that they have towards the cultural conversation of Me Too and the wage gap and the patriarchy and increasing ideals, women often take exception to what they're trying to say instead of listening. And this just makes men retreat further. And the comment section of my post hopefully won't, but will probably bear this out. Have a conversation like this in a space like the public square, and you're only inviting attack.
Mm-hmm.
And when men can't discuss manhood or bond without the cries of exclusion, the void is filled by people like Trump. And so when you don't allow men to have men's clubs,
mm-hmm.
When you don't, you know, nobody squeaks or says a word when women have, you know, the Red Hat Society or girls only clubs, because you want to encourage that. You want to encourage gender based bonding.
Mm-hmm.
But when men do it, it's seen as evil by really what happens is those feminist writers that all work in New York City that want to be Carrie Bradshaw, that work for these spam mills like Bustle, like Babe, like the Huffington Post,
mm-hmm.
that are these major SEO titans. These companies control so much of our political and cultural discourse. And so when they find something offensive, they set the tone of the conversation. And when you're dealing with radical SJW feminists of both male and female persuasion,
mm-hmm.
setting the cultural conversation, you're starting from a position of being attacked and defending yourself. And if you've read Sun Tzu's The Art of War, defending yourself is the worst position that you can possibly fight a war in. And I'm not saying that this needs to be a war, because it needs to be an open and vulnerable conversation about what men need to be equals with women, and what women need to be equals with men, and how can we be good partners with each other and not be divided along the gender lines,
mm-hmm.
or racist lines or religious lines, or political lines. We're not that far apart. I saw that at the rally. So many of the people in that crowd, you could have easily put them in the middle of the Tea Party crowd. They look alike. They talk alike. Their goal is to make a better world for their kids and their grandkids.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're not that far off, but our conversation is so bent because we're allowing the conversation to be controlled by cliches and spam mills and clickbots. So men, I think, are retreating and becoming angrier, and men are failing society by staying boys. Men, you're failing yourself, you're failing your family, you're failing your future family if you are staying a boy. If you're not dealing with what it means to be a man, and who is there to teach you? Because your dad's probably a man child too. You know, we don't.
Or they didn't get to see him.
Right.
A lot of kids they are separated from their fathers just because the mother or the wife decided to, you know, that's the tool she's going to use to destroy this guy.
Or, yeah, women choose men who aren't going to stick around.
Right. And the other thing is he's probably, like, or jaded about the whole experience and have said such bad things, but he probably doesn't want to be around or has his own problem he has to deal with.
Right.
You know, if you want to see some oppression, find a guy that's paying child support and ask to look at his paychecks. How much did he bring home? You want to see oppression.
Yeah. I mean, if you have a child and you're a man, you have a duty to take care of that boy and raise that boy or girl. Like, you have a duty to do that. And
but there's more to raising a kid than just money.
And I don't even think being a father is just the essential part of being a man. Mm-hmm. I think there's virtue. Like, what values do you hold? What goals do you hold? How are you going to meaningfully contribute to the world directly around you? We spend so much time sitting there thinking about Washington, D.C. and global politics and sports and things that happen hundreds of miles away from us, but we spend no time thinking about the immediate circle of influence that we have. And we, as men, are disconnecting from that and disengaging. And I apologize. I have still dealing with the fallout from the cold, so my nose is all messed up. So
keeps looking at his bottle. He wants to take a hit.
So women should have equality with men, and all of the men that I choose to be friends with agree with that. Men don't want to feel like second-class citizens, and they don't want women to feel like second-class citizens. Yes, women were second-class citizens in previous generations, but a period of subjugation isn't the answer. Any movement that seeks to change by naming a scapegoat is manipulative and wrong. We need an honest dialogue with men and women without attacking each other. The same applies to races, religions, political ideologies. And a dialogue needs to be carved out for men to excel emotionally, mentally, spiritually, physically, in relationships, and at work. And my TLDR was, change the gender narrative from girls rule and boys drool to, let's kick ass together. What do you need from me to make that happen? It's less catchy but healthier. And, you know, the extension of that childish thinking, you know, When you become an adult, you're supposed to put away childish thinking. And the idea that girls rule, boys drool, and that men have to suffer for you to be significant is just not a correct idea. And I don't think that there's any women listening to this audience that think that. I think it's the people setting the conversation in New York City, in L.A., and these blogging sites that influence a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
But what I think men need from women is the allowance to be vulnerable and open about how they're feeling. And I think that if you're a woman listening to this, couple things. First, recognize that you as a woman have never had it better in the history of the world. And the men in your life, by and large, are probably trying to help make that happen because they love you and care for you. And women across society are excelling, and men are stagnating. And so you're growing while they're not, and you know that spurns jealousy and resentment. And when they have a different view, a different perception of things, and people who are excelling are going, I'm the victim, there's a pendulum that swings back the other way that's not good. And whenever somebody has tried to be made out to be the scapegoat, that's not good. So think about the words that you use and the arguments that you advance on social media and in discussions with your friends and family. And if you find friends and family are scapegoating men and not trying to find equality but trying to get one over,
mm-hmm.
You don't get over somebody by getting under somebody. That's not the right way to do it, is it, Harry?
No.
Help men by saying to those women, are the arguments we're using helping or hurting men? And men, I think you need to chill the F out. Like, men are so quick to share that meme or share that cliched argument or bash the women's march. And so everybody's just sitting there going, okay, well, now I feel attacked because you're against the women's march. Well, I feel attacked because you're making me the object of your misery. When in reality, nobody's doing any of that. It's just the arguments are being completely conflated. Like, mm-hmm. we're just losing sight of what a rational argument about gender roles is because we're drugged to one side or the other, feeling we have to defend our boys or defend our side, and it's just we're losing touch of each other's humanity and what actually will work best for society and each other.
Yeah, well, a lot of it's because like is the sense of being attacked and always being attacked.
Right.
You've got to understand, like, when you come out and you try to talk about young men in their video games like that, the feminist narrative has came out and tried to attack male gamers for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's, you know, so those wounds that you just, like, try to just to point at, like, they're hurt. And that's why, like, the, if you notice when you pull something like that, hey, people come out with teeth because, you know, they've been attacked in that spot for so many times.
Right.
And they're ready to, you know, they're ready to throw down. But the... I think the main reason, like you see a lot of men, like, you know, make fun of the march because, one, you know, they see, a lot of them have a 1,000-yard view of it
mm-hmm.
versus someone out there. And they're like, now you went there with such an open mind from everything and you saw that.
Right.
You saw a lot of the crap, the rhetoric from it. But did any, but the people you're around, did they see any of that?
Oh, I think that if I had gotten on stage, I said, Michelle, what do you think would happen if I got on stage to speak? And she just laughed because she knew there wasn't any intellectual diversity on that stage.
No.
They were, you know, the speaker right before the keynote, the audience was almost gone because it was starting to rain and it was cold. And
mm-hmm.
and she goes, you know, I'm sorry this program's been long, but this is what you have when you have inclusive diversity. You everybody gets a chance to speak, and you know that just makes it very long. Like, okay, I'm okay with that. But on the program, I did not see a conservative woman.
Nope.
I didn't see a libertarian woman. I didn't see anybody from the March for Life.
Yep, I'm sure.
You know, you didn't see any coverage of the March for Life, and there were probably twice the amount for March for Life than there were for the Women's March in the same spot the next day. But they're not going to cover that.
Yep.
And it goes back to kind of what we talked with Glenn Beck. It's the people in the media are left-leaning,
mm-hmm.
and they do have left sensibilities.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same... rejection of it, that we're repulsed by it if you're not a leftist.
Right.
And you're watching this going, how do you not see your own bias? How are you pretending that you have no bias and you still have a bias? And
it's easier.
It's easier. It's mentally easier, and you're not going to be shamed and an outcast
mm-hmm.
From your group. And I think there's a real problem that when change is made too quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw this with the civil rights. You had the civil rights movement make a change within a decade. And then you had a real hard knee-jerk back to the right, and racial tensions got worse in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
You could argue that racial tensions are worse now because we moved forward with a black president, and then certain elements in our country are going, too much, nope, right back to Trump. And so when you see a lot of progress... like you're seeing with the opening up of gender roles, the acceptance of forced norms aren't healthy, you run the risk, the women's rights activists run the risk of pushing men too far too quickly, or society in general, because there are a lot of women who think the way that Donald Trump thinks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you run the risk of pushing the more conservative elements of our country, conservative meaning I want to preserve these institutions and these norms.
Right.
You run the risk of those people pushing back really hard in a way that none of us are going to like.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and there, that's why I look at this and I go, like, can we have a fucking attaboy at some point? Like,
no.
You know, there's still more work to do. It's like, I'm tired. Like, I mean...
yeah.
Like, I'm tired.
Well, you saw what happened when the G and the GLBT community, when the gays stopped, like, okay, we've got, when the gay community finally got gay marriage, right?
Mm-hmm.
You watched the leftist media just attack them. Okay, you got your thing. You're not done. You still have to fight for all this other stuff. Now it's all about the women's thing. So it's like, and they kept writing articles about how gay men are the most misogynist of all men.
Right.
You know, it's like, come on. You know,
right.
They were like, brothers in arms a year, you know, a few months before. But now it's nope. They had their attaboy. They're trying to be on their laurels, and nope. They can mansplain too, and they're misogynists too. Look what they're doing.
And you get like to LGBT specifically. This is the greatest time to be a gay person in America. You know, and this generation opened up marriage and equality, and then now you're suing religious people because they won't serve you a cake, right. And it's their decision. And so you just, that's the one step too far. Like, there's, you know, you can't just say, all right, that's good. We've got this. Let's rest on this victory for a second, and maybe wait a generation. And that's, of course, I'm making the argument that people used against Martin Luther King all the time. And he said, there's not a time, you can't wait for injustice to be, you know, rectified. I'm not advocating for that. I'm saying that if you are a progressive person, you are fighting a conservative person. That conservative person, they will eventually get enough people on their side going too far too fast. And you have a violent reaction backwards. And the reaction, I think, with like the women's stuff, the Me Too stuff, is we talked about it last week. You're going to get less women having more women are going to have less opportunities because men are more afraid of them because you have more power than we do now. So, you know, the female coworkers of my job can get me fired with a lie if they wanted to. Yeah. I don't have that power.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and so
there's a show. There's been guys that have been kicked out of colleges, you know, for a lie, been expelled from colleges they've worked hard to get to, you know, and they've lost years of their life of when they're supposed to be in college and they get kicked out on a lie. On a lie. You know, some have been saved thanks just for the ability to save text messages, which is apparently very hard. Like Mattress Girl, the only reason that guy didn't, you know, end up in jail, text messages. You know, a lot of times it was all, you know, just saving texts.
Yep.
But yeah, it's that type of like, and that's another reason why there's tons of different guys that are like, well, what's the point? Why even play that game? Why even get there? You know, if I could get five guys living in like a 2-bedroom apartment on bunk beds and we hot swap them all the time and play video games and we all make $10 an hour, why go anymore? I got what I wanted. I got my car. I got my video game system. I'm hanging out with my bros. We got beers on Friday.
Right.
You know, what castle? Why save the princess and go fight the dragon at the castle when, you know, the princess is going to yell at me and she'll team up with the dragon and kick my ass?
Right. Yeah, what was the, I saw some, speaking of the dragon, come up with some brilliance while I look for this thing.
Oh, the
because this is ridiculous. This is the exact thing that I'm talking about that I want to play.
All right, so coming up with brilliance, I don't even know what the heck that means, but like I can also see like the standpoint with like Chris is saying though, but the at the same time, as a young male, there's not many different programs out for you. There's all these push for like trying to teach women how to get into computers or now luckily like most of the like the tech spaces, there are like some small women's groups on it, but most of them, you know, like they bring guys in to either help teach or bring stuff or showcase, but they do try to make it like a women's space just to make it more comfortable to the like new women into the space.
Right.
And they use it for networking, but majority of those women leave those spaces and they go to what is quote unquote predominantly male spaces and tech spaces. Like, you know, when they have like that female only like tech space, it's there to bring new women in or and for networking, and but you'll see them in every other male networking space. It's the same way with I wish it was also some way for things that are more female dominated. Like every time I try to get like a younger man into sewing, it's very, very hard and it's very intimidating for them.
Right.
Because like you go to Joann's Fabrics and there's these older women, and I get it too. That's why I don't like going to I go to a certain Joann's, because, you know, the women there are a little bit more hood, so they're a little nicer to me walking in through there because I'm there to spend money and I steal things. But you can go into like a fabric store, and they, as a man, and they will look at you like I remember I went there with Lacey one time to get fabrics to make a coat, and they were rather wanting, and they kept sat there and they wanted to deal with Lacey. They wanted to deal with her. They thought she was there, and they did not want to deal with me. But it's also like that in like these weird different spaces like that, like some of like the women car groups. A lot of them are set up just to get women into cars, be a nice easy spot for it. And then, you see a lot of these women just use that to like for introduction, and then they move them out to other space.
Right.
You know, go out, do your own thing. Go off and do your own thing. I think another one is Boogie. Not Boogie 298, but Boogie's at Boogie's Garage.
Nobody knows what you're talking about.
Everyone here knows who Boogie's 298 is, okay? You almost look like Boogie 298.
Thank you.
You're welcome. He's he's trying to catch up to your weight, though.
You son of a bitch. All right, so I don't know why this annoyed me, but it did.
What is this?
And like, there's things that like, sometimes when things are, and I'm trying to figure out my own behavior with like this commentary, because I'm
scared.
I have these fundamental beliefs that women are equal and that women do belong in the workplace and that women should not be forced to certain gender roles. And, you know, you should want to make me a sandwich, but I'm not going to make you, you know, like, I'll make you a sandwich. Why wouldn't you want to make me one?
I make terrible sandwiches. Lacey makes a lot better sandwich.
But like when stuff like this comes out, I just like I roll my eyes so hard and I just go, why? Why am I mad about this? It's Speak Like a Girl. They're a slam poetry group. Megan Folley and Olivia Gatwood. Princess Peach Speaks. So this is Princess Peach from the Mario Brothers. This is her end of the story, because Mario Brothers is sexist and it's told from Mario's point of view, and we need the Princess Peach point of view, and these two young ladies are here to tell us.
Princess Peach speaks. Thanks, Mario,
I guess.
For fighting all those Koopa Troopas.
And riding on the backs of dolphins.
And traveling all the way to Star World to save me.
You keep saying it was a lot of hard work.
How you almost lost all of your 99 lives.
How I should be grateful.
But from my corner of the castle, it looked a lot like adventure.
But what do I know? I'm just a kid and caught up in a tree.
I get to sit in this 8-bit castle.
Guarded by that fire-breathing turtle fuck. And I'm here for however long it takes your
slow shit ass to get past that fucking flying level. And now, of course, what I want to do is get married, enter into another imprisonment called matrimony with you.
You, whose brother wears the exact...
Matrimony or prison, okay?
That same outfit as you, except in a different color.
Like twin little fucking infants.
He's always whispering into my hair.
Damn, Peach, if only I'd got to you first. But your princess is in another castle.
Filing her taxes.
Because she's a princess.
And gets a hell of a lot more money than you.
Mario, when she needs her toilet unclogged.
She'll call you.
Mario, but your princess is in another castle.
I don't know, preparing to inherit rule of an entire country?
Princess Peach got work to do. Princess already brushed her hair today.
Now Princess gotta make some phone calls.
Send some emails. Get her ball gown fitted just right. Oh, you thought Princess was trapped by Bowser?
Maybe Princess hired Bowser as a bouncer.
Because she didn't have time to reject you at the door.
What makes you think every time Princess doesn't answer, it means she needs your help?
Can't a woman get some alone time around here to deal with her shit?
What shit, you ask?
I don't know. Body image, rape culture, motherhood, gender roles, the fact that no one will let her wear anything but a pink dress? You ride a dinosaur who comes in more colors than I do.
I don't ever get to ride a dinosaur.
You fought off a baseball-throwing football player, and now you're entitled to Peach's Peach? I should have stayed with Bowser, because at least he called himself Monster.
At least he knew what he was.
Not some one-dimensional super nerd who thinks human decency is foreplay, who thinks a savior complex gets me wet.
Harry.
You're a plumber.
So I Harry, thought you'd no, be no. able to smell your own bullshit.
Don't hang yourself.
You're the date who buys a nice dinner, then calls me a bitch when I don't let
body.
You upstairs.
You're the guy on the street
thumbnail.
Who tells me to smile before cutting it into me.
You're all the states in America where it is legal to rape your wife. So fuck you, Mario.
Well, here's a level.
You can beat it. Get a life.
Okay, some 23-year-old theater nerds are basically mansplaining to us society. That's like, you know, I just don't live in the reality that you live in.
Apparently Mario's just like, screw this, I'm gonna go play tennis.
Right, honestly. Like, that's why Mario got his Super World. He was like, I'm out of here.
I'm out. I've made so many coins. I'm out. I'm gonna go do this.
Poor Harry. He tried to hang himself during the middle of that.
I know. I set Chris Bengel up to be, you know, try to do like the Jake Paul this and dab next to my dead body. You know, use it for the thumbnail. I know, it's like it was awful, like, because it's like I'm going to read into this story and put all this oppression into this, and it's like, all right, it's 8 bits, so we can only put so many stuff in here, and it's a small different story, you know. Pick up a book. You hardly ever see any some of the stuff like that. But it's just, right. I can get it for a point, but the simple fact that people use stuff like that to try to beat me over the head with a cudgel about gender roles and other things like that, that's the problem I have with it. If it stays where it is and it's a nice little small theater piece to like almost just like satire, just trying to be ironic from that, that's funny. That's cool. That's unique.
There were a couple, I laughed. I mean, you heard me laugh a couple times.
Yeah. It's more of the people who's go like, see, this is what we're talking about. This is what we need to do and change about video games. That's when I have the problem with it.
Yeah. No, I mean, to me, when I hear that, I hear the same thing as a guy saying, like, genuinely believing that women only belong in the kitchen or only to be stay-at-home moms. You know, you're the same equivalent as women who say you're wrong for being a stay-at-home mom.
Right,
like,
yeah.
Like, that's a moral equivalency. And so I think all the rest of us are just kind of stuck in the middle going, I don't know. I mean, things are kind of good for everybody. Like, there isn't a voice out there, I think, going, everything's really just fine. Like, everybody's making everything this massive issue, and everything's on fire because they're trying to politically manipulate everybody to their side, mm-hmm. when in reality, and they can do it in the age of echo chambers, when in reality, everything's actually pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Like,
culturally and societally.
There are sometimes, like, when I'm at home, right, and I feel bad, and I start like, and I have to call other people up, because the hardest thing about my day, the two hardest things, right, is one, listen to the baby cry before I get coffee. That freaking sucks. Uh-huh. Okay, that's like that's one of the top one hardest thing I do all day.
Right.
And the second hardest thing that I do all day is feeling that I didn't do enough and feeling like crap.
Right.
And it's kind of neat dealing with all the mothers, because they're a little bit more open about their feelings, which kind of lets me be and basically tell them how I'm feeling. And letting that out, they let me know, like, oh, that's freaking normal.
Right.
That's normal.
That's the best thing about community, is people getting together who have a certain same issue, a certain same identity,
mm-hmm.
be it race, culture, color, religion, disease, whatever. You get together with people who have similar experiences as you and go, what you're feeling is normal.
Yep.
You're not weird.
Mm-hmm.
And then they feel a sense of belonging, and they go, oh, great. When I was going through my divorce, I went through something called divorce care. And I think that if you're going through a divorce, if you're within a year of your divorce, or if you're contemplating divorce, or if you're separated, divorce care, it's all one word, is a great resource for people who are going through divorce. And it's like a 10-week study. It's attached to a lot of Christian churches, but I can tell you it's not really churchy. It's really more of a support group, and it's one of the best support groups I've ever been in, like 12-step support groups. I've gone to Al-Anon and Codependence Anonymous. They're depressing as hell. But like, divorce care was great, and I got a lot out of it because everybody else was going through what I was going through. The sense of relief, the guilt over feeling relieved that I was divorced.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was bad. That was a bad thing. Like, divorce is bad. You should feel bad about it.
Yeah.
But the relief is something that everybody kind of feels.
Oh, wow.
Because you're not living with somebody who hates your guts. You know, you're relieved to kind of have that pressure off of you a little bit. The idea of, I just could break down crying at any moment. Like, even, like, we expect, like, women are allowed to do that, but men, we don't think that we can do that.
Yeah.
I've wept in so many Walmart parking lots over the last, not the last year, but the 2 years after my divorce,
mm-hmm.
because it's just a lot of, it's a lot of bad shit.
Yes.
And when you can go and be with other people going through a similar experience, you know, like, white people don't know what it's like to be a black person. And so there should be black groups there, you know, there should be Latino groups, there should be Christian groups, there should be Muslim groups. Like, people who have certain beliefs or identities should be allowed and encouraged to connect with people who have those same identities, because that allows them to share that common human experience. It makes them better people. It makes them less depressed. And that makes society better.
So if I went out and started my own libertarian group, nothing but black libertarians, call it the Black Quill, mm-hmm. you know, fill it up with nothing, that's okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, okay. I'll call Derry. Sure.
Yeah, call the other one. so yeah.
He'd hate the branding of it.
So yes, sorry, let's start wrapping up. So what we're going to do is
snaps. It's 9:30.
Yeah, it's almost 9:30, but we still are going to talk the shutdown, the FBI text, but we're going to do that on the bonus feed. So if you want to hear our opinion and my thoughts on the shutdown,
yeah,
and some details of what's going on with the FBI investigations, then you're going to have to tune in on the Patreon channel. So here's how it works. You go to patreon.com/wearelibertarians, or you can get the link at wearelibertarians.com, our website. Just Google that, and you'll find it. And essentially, you're going to sign up. You put in a profile, and you pledge to give us $5 or more at the beginning of next month.
Mm-hmm.
So on the 1st, it pulls on the 1st. And that day, you don't even have to give to today to get the feed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a private link that is active when you are active, and you get to put that in your podcatcher, your iTunes, however you listen to the podcast, and you put that into your RSS feed, and then you can listen.
Yep.
And it's super easy. It's just like it's no problem at all. And what that does is that affords us the resources to continue to do this, to continue to grow the show, and. You know, if you get something out of this, then give something for it, because there's no such thing as a free lunch. It's costing somebody somewhere something to do this. Why not you? So even a dollar a month helps if you would be so gracious. And we're going to give you great content, like we're going to give you probably another 30 to 60 minutes on the government shutdown. And you're going to get 2 hours of Harry's low-key wall, which he does on Wednesday nights on the Twitch channel.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, anytime I do interviews, I put that up there. I'll put that, the Juice Kelly, the Juice in the AM interview that I did, I'll put that up in the Patreon tomorrow. So, yeah, you get something for giving us something, and it's basically an extra 2 to 3 hours a week of the show. So, love for you to join that and support our efforts. So with that, we're going to wrap up, and we're going to give our final thoughts in this episode. Harry, your final thoughts.
Let's see. Only final thoughts I've got for is, one, please, if you do like us, also come over to the Twitch. Give We Are Libertarians a follow, because we're getting really close to that magic 50 numbers to become affiliates. So please come over there, help us out. Come hang out. Especially low-key wall is really cool. When we do that live, I like to interact with the chat and everything for that one. And have people from the Discord be able to get on and speak through it.
Right.
For this episode, I think it goes back to what I like about it is that Chris went down to the Women's March, and he went there basically with the 10 tenets of We Are Libertarians and looked through everything through that lens there and reported back where they has, because he saw the pros, the cons, and everything, and be able to see where he agreed with people and where he disagreed with people, and didn't treat them as others or monsters. So that's all I have.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much. Yeah, I enjoyed it. Like, you, if you go to something where you feel like you're not going to be accepted and you're scared, you shouldn't be. People are going to actually be very friendly. Nobody interacted with me unless I interacted with them. You know, they're there with their friends. They're having a good time. They're listening. You know, so you're not going to go to something like that and they're going to consider you a spy. You got caught. That's just not how it's going to work. So you should make the effort to go out there into the world and to people that you don't necessarily agree with. Mm-hmm. So let's see. I'm trying to load the rewards here because I want to thank our Patreon subscribers.
Going to give you enough time to load that up.
Yes. So Brandon Luke, Craig DaCosta, Jason Doolittle, and Christy Avery, thank you so much. You are our $100 a month subscribers. You guys are awesome. You help me out so much in so many different ways. Our $25 reward subscribers, Stone Aldridge, Brantley Spicer, Rick Irvine, Nick Economopoulos, Chad Oakage, Joey Tarner, Carly Ernst, Brandon Kester, Heidi Aldridge, Kristen Emmons, Dan Dunbar, Doug Stream, Christopher Brokoff, and Todd Singer. Thank you so much. $10 rewards, Joshua Sexton, Ray Wolf, Jordan Laycock, Lauren Moss, Mark English, Derek Lynn, John Brett, Logan Knoll, Chris Murray, Reinhold, our good friend Reinhold from the Discord, Joshua Laughlin, Samuel Alexander, Jeremy Franklin, Brian Kloss, Joe Benavidez, sorry, Joe, Eric Anderson, Sarah Potter, Eric Bartline, David Stovall, Jess Nixon, Justin Mitchell, Derek Mishu, Mike Trant, Zach Felker, James Darling, Eric Neff, Brian Travis, sorry, Brian, Chris Lane, Ryan Clancy, Ken Walker, Rebecca Cash, and David Anderson. You guys are awesome, and obviously, every time we read off our $10 group, that gets larger. We live stream the video of the show. Go check out. We have different reward tiers, so check that out, too. So I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank you for supporting us, for joining our community, for being engaged. The best part about We Are Libertarians, two great things. For me, it is the study of this. Like, I spend a lot of hours prepping for this, and I get to learn by teaching. That's personally rewarding, but I think more rewarding is watching you guys bond with each other, you know, and things like the Discord and the Facebook group where people talk to each other and make friendships from the Facebook group and the Discord and coming together around this common element, which is this podcast, is so cool. And so if you're looking for friends and you're a libertarian, you definitely are looking for friends, then please go to WeAreLibertarians.com and join the community. We'd love for you to get involved. We'd love for you to connect with us on all our different platforms that you'll find there. So thank you, and until next time, we're going to be back Thursday. We're going to be here with Chris Galt, Creighton Harrington. They're coming back for one final episode before Creighton goes out to New York City. And we're going to watch the Jordan Peterson Channel 4 interview together and break it down and comment on all the different points that are made in that, because I think it's a real flashpoint for society, and I've seen a lot of people discussing it, and I want to weigh in on it. And the best way to do it is just kind of do it point by point as we go through the entire interview. So if you haven't seen it, watch it in anticipation of Thursday. So until then, I say thank you for listening, and we will see you on Thursday.